wiener, 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 wiener. I think over-discussing things, particularly in a show that's as over-discussed as Game of Thrones, is diminishing. Not my words, listeners, but the words of Aidan Gillen, who plays Littlefinger on Game of Thrones. And with that in mind, welcome to another podcast about Game of Thrones. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to this very special spoiler special. Keitella wrote this in the bus on the way in, dedicated to the seventh and penultimate season of HBO's Game of Thrones. Yes, over the next 90 minutes or so, we'll be discussing the twists and the turns, the deaths and the dragons, the great joys and the great joys. I went great joys, Anne Helen, sorry. Of this season. And yes, I know there are already dozens of Game of Thrones podcasts out there brought to you by specialists who are deeply immersed and well-versed in the books and the show. Hello to Joanna Robinson and Storm of Spoilers, to name but one. But none of those are hosted by an idiot who has seen literally two episodes of this show. So there's a gap in the market. Thought we'd fill it. And thankfully, to counteract my craven foolishness, honestly, I am such a Rickon, are two people who are heavily versed in the shows and the books. Welcome, Helen O'Hara.
Hello.
And James Dyer.
Hello.
How are you both?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, good.
Excellent. You excited about this season? How did the season of Game of Thrones, did it match up to your lofty expectations? Were your expectations lofty?
I mean, it has dragons in it and dragons doing dragony things like burning stuff. So yeah. I very much enjoyed that, obviously. Yeah. It mostly did live up to my expectations. It managed to shock me quite frequently. And
That's interesting.
Or at least surprise me quite frequently. Okay. And I mean, there was a lot of really satisfying stuff in it, which was good and made up for some of the bits that made no sense.
This is very true. It has a velocity to it that has been, that's Velociraptor, not Velociraptor.
Velociraptor.
It has a pace to it which has been lacking thus far. It's quite funny though, because we're 7 years in at this point and that suddenly they picked up the pace, and I'm thinking, if people weren't down with the really convoluted plotting and dynastic stuff, by this point they've probably stopped watching. So, you know, it's not like they've suddenly gone mainstream.
Okay.
But no, it's good. Liked it lots. Very quick. Things exciting. We're building to a climax. It's quite funny. It's interesting that when they were following the books, mm-hmm. it was very plodding and very careful. And the second they have become unfettered from the source material, they have flown much like a dragon at speed. Not dissimilarly, I think, to the Wheel of Time series. Just draw a slide.
I'm going to put a stop to that shit right now. Okay, this is Game of Thrones.
We may be back here.
Other arcane nonsense.
We may be back here in 15 years. We may be back here in 15 years to discuss the hit Wheel of Time series, which they keep threatening to adapt. But
I'm really looking forward to the episode when Nynaeve tugs her braid.
Oh, no, no.
You know what? Let's move on.
No.
Because James is being disrespectful.
No. No.
To James's credit, though, can I just give credit where it's due?
I've never heard that phrase before.
Well,
neither have I.
When I just joined Empire, a few months after I joined, I was still like Web Monkey, I think was my job title at the time. James, for my birthday, gave me several books. And being a total bastard, he gave me number one of several different series, causing me to then have to, you know, spend vast amounts of money finishing them off. Okay. But one of them was the first book of Game of Thrones.
I'd completely forgotten that. Yeah. What were the others? Do you remember?
They weren't as good.
Okay, fine.
But I still have them somewhere.
Yeah, no, I've been reading the Game of Thrones book since, I think, 2000. I think I bought the first one in 2000. Mm-hmm. And I finished the third one on top of literally Mount Doom in New Zealand. I was doing the Tongariro crossing. And I finished there and I was like, oh, excellent. When I get down to the bottom, I'll find a bookshop and buy the next one, wasn't finished for 5 years.
My sweet summer child.
Yeah, exactly. I was very naive, and so I was frothing and raging for many years afterwards.
Okay, so we're going to get into spoiler territory. Obviously, this is a spoiler special. So if you haven't seen Game of Thrones, then you're qualified to host this podcast, quite frankly. But if you haven't seen Game of Thrones and you don't want to know what happens, we are going to be discussing it in great big spoilerific detail. So just go away. High lead to wherever it is you go.
Take the black
sofa.
Go to the wall.
Look good. Just go to your local couch and watch just a season or the finale. I watched the finale. I'm up to speed. I know what's happening with all the Starks and the Theons and the people with the zombie things. Mm. I know all about that sort of stuff.
Such an expert.
But yeah, so we'll be discussing that soon. But we do have a guest as well. Before you hear us three idiots talking about the show, we do have a guest. And he is one of the few surviving Starks. He is the three-eyed raven. He was a kid, but now he's all Bran. He is, of course, Isaac Hempstead Wright, Bran Stark himself, and he was talking to Helen and James, which is good, because if he'd been talking to me, I honestly wouldn't have had a clue. I'm really establishing my credentials here as the host of this podcast.
Really, yeah.
He was talking to Helen and James about all manner of things, past, present, and future. Do enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. Isaac Hempstead Wright, hello, how are you doing?
Hello, how's it going?
So this is for our Game of Thrones Season 7 spoiler special. We should make clear, we're going to spoil Season 7 in this. We're not going to spoil Season 8 for one very good reason, isn't that right?
Yep, I've got no idea what happens yet.
Fantastic.
We're in the golden period where Season 7 has finished and we don't know what's going on in Season 8, so I can theorise all I like without fear of accidentally working out what's going to happen.
Do they Fantastic. Give you all of the scripts in advance?
They kind of do it in bursts, so you'll get like 3 or 4 episodes and then the next 3. But you get the whole thing, which is in equal parts terrifying and exciting. So like, for the previous seasons, it's you're just excited to read it all. I'm absolutely terrified of the day when I get sent the Season 8 scripts because I don't want the ending to this thing in my head.
That's unusual, because they send you the whole thing. They don't just give you your pages, and then you all have to get together and piece them.
Now, I don't know whether Season 8 will be different, because I think there have been so many problems with people trying to hack and leak and so forth. So I don't know whether that will be slightly tighter this year.
It would make a certain amount of sense, I guess. I mean, how do you feel going into the final season? Because this has been, you know, part of your life now for half your life?
Pretty much literally 50% of my existence.
That's nuts.
Has been Game of Thrones.
Feels the same way for all of us.
No, I'm really excited, mainly to see how they're going to wrap it all up, just as a fan of the show, but it's going to be very odd not going off to Belfast every year and hanging out in the rain for 6 months in medieval costumes. And seeing the set. That's the thing. We really are a very tight-knit family, the Game of Thrones cast and crew, and that is really true. So it's a great shame that we're not going to be able to spend as much time together anymore. So it's going to be bittersweet.
You have to have poker nights or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you really have been pretty much stuck in Belfast.
Yeah,
almost entirely.
Very few excursions to warm places. I made it to Spain for a week.
I was going to say, that was like, it was like, finally he gets abroad.
When they actually said it, I couldn't believe it. I thought it was some kind of cruel trick, but
I remember reading on IMDb that you'd originally gone to drama lessons to get out of doing football in the cold, and yet you've been literally up to your arse in snow for 7 years.
The irony. I remember I just got the part, and we were going off to film the first day, and I'd never had any experience of the film industry before, really, and went and shot the in the pilot, the scene where we find the direwolves, and I kid you not, it rained from 4 in the morning till 8 in the evening, non-stop, drenched. I was like, oh, okay, this is not exactly what I was hoping for.
Hollywood, here I come.
Yeah.
This is not the glamour I was promised.
Yeah, no, Game of Thrones is not a glamorous set. Or at least not the locations aren't.
I'm from Northern Ireland, I understand. Yeah. It's
beautiful, it's just quite wet.
Yes, it is. It's funny now, because when I go home, and if you sort of drive along the coast, literally everywhere you stop has a little sign saying Game of Thrones shot this here. Yeah. Game of Thrones shot that here.
Northern Ireland finally on the map.
Finally, honestly, it's a huge deal locally. Absolutely. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you watch the episodes? After
I do.
How do you do it? Do you watch it with everyone else? Do you watch them in advance? Do you have cast screenings?
We watched the first episode at the premiere every year, and then you get to see bits and pieces when you do sort of post-production stuff, and so you can kind of piece together ideas, and you always whenever you're with producers or someone who has it on their computer, you're like, oh, come on, show me one of the scenes. But in general, we watch it as it comes out on the TV. So I literally watched the last episode on Monday night with everyone else.
Wow.
Live.
And did you, I mean, do you get, presumably when people are going to die, they get the call.
It's true. It's like some Mossad type stuff. You get like find your obituary in the no. Yeah, you get. I mean, I haven't had one yet. In the next few weeks, I may well receive one. Basically, you'll get a call in the morning or at whatever time, and they'll say. Your agent will say, Dave and Dan want to have a conversation with you later, and then you know it's up.
Because they never call normally.
The most terrifying thing was, in season five, I had a season off, and so it was all sort of getting ready for the preparations for the new season, and then I got this call from my agent saying, oh, the producers would like to speak to you later. I think, oh, no, this is it. So when they just said, oh, just you're going to take a season off, I was like, oh, brilliant, that's fine. I'll take two seasons off.
Long as you want, mate, it's fine. Yeah. Let's talk about this season a little bit, because, you know, Bran, to say he's changed would be an understatement. Like, he's genuinely, there's an entirely different person in his head now. Or person may be the wrong word.
Yeah, well, it's more that the person he was is a much smaller part of his head now. It's like, there was that great line he said to Mira, which really summed it up, which was, I remember what it felt like to be Brandon Stoke, but I remember so much else now.
Mm. Yeah.
And so it's really like, it's impossible to imagine what that would do to a human brain, having the entire history of the universe downloaded all of a sudden. And we can see that Bran still isn't ready for this yet. As the old Three-Eyed Raven made it quite clear, Bran is not ready. He's had to jump into this before he's completed all his training. And so how his power is now is, it's like he's got a Kindle library of everything, every volume of time, but he hasn't read through them all yet. Whereas the old Three-Eyed Raven has sat in that tree for 2,000 odd years, has learned every word off by heart, but Bran still needs to be guided in the right direction, which is so great now that he's united with perhaps the most curious character in Game of Thrones, Samwell Tarly.
Yeah, what a good combo.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that scene between them was great, because you could see him realising, oh, here's a place I need to look at, let's go there.
Yeah,
I love that.
He's got the ultimate CCTV collection ever.
Like, did you know this? No, I didn't know that. Hang on a second, let me watch it happen in real time.
Nice one.
Genius. That was a lovely moment, actually, earlier in the season when he's mansplaining what he's doing to Gilly, and she drops the biggest plot bombshell we've ever had, and he just cruises straight through it completely.
I know people are quite frustrated, actually, that he hit it with Bran, he didn't give Gilly the credit for that.
Yeah.
Like, Gilly found this out.
Well, I think the line is that he's already translated it, and that's what she was reading. But like, even so, he did not cover himself in glory in that scene.
No, he didn't.
And then we get to see the sort of the wolf pack, the Stark team up,
back in business.
Back in business at last. Yeah. It's been a really long time.
I know. It was such a bittersweet reunion to begin with. Thinking that Sansa was going to murder her sister, and Bran was just this creepy, like, psychopath who just keeps getting left out by that weirwood tree. It's like, everyone always leaves and just leaves Bran in his wheelchair. It's like, how's he going to get back? To watch them all come together and work as a team, I think was really cool.
Come on, listen to that wonderful kind of mock trial scene, as it were, wonderfully played by Aidan Gillen.
I know, being on set for that day was like, watching him do that over and over again, and those just the confused expression of Littlefinger finally unravelling. All these lies catching up to him with unfortunately no way of getting out of it, because he does have a CCTV man sitting at the table going, oh, actually, he said that.
I was there. Know everything. Sorry.
Sorry, mate.
There was a wonderful line you had with the chaos is a ladder line. That was fantastic.
That was so much fun.
Everyone furiously going the internet, what does that mean? I've heard that before.
Exactly.
So do you think everyone in Winterfell seems to have got now that Bran's got weird powers? They may not know exactly
or it's just weird. It's one of the two, really, for them.
It's like he's a little bit cuckoo. I mean Bran is really a pretty powerful weapon, to be honest. To have someone who can literally fact check anything or look up anything in the history of the world and have him at your beck and call is a pretty useful
Can we officially refer to that as Bransplaining?
Yeah, I've heard it called Brugling, like Bran Googling.
That works too. I like them both. Okay. And he did a bit less kind of exciting warging this season, and I kind of feel like that might be why theories have gone crazy, like the Night King theory.
Night King thing. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've literally seen people putting pictures of my face next to the Night King's. Well, that's it. That's confirmed. They're identical. It's like, do I really look like an ancient ice zombie?
Apparently, yeah.
I don't see it right now. You know, I didn't see it in the pictures. I guess they have two eyes and two ears, so you know, it's pretty.
For all you know, this is legitimately where it's going.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, if I'd read that Hodor theory on the internet, I would have thought, oh, no, that's crazy.
Well, how far... I mean, did you know that at the beginning of the season? That must have been quite the bombshell.
I just remember reading it, and I was like, this can't be... And when it actually said, and then Hodor died... Well, it didn't exactly say die, but it's, you know, left pretty clear that he's been massacred. I genuinely didn't believe it. I thought, no, he's coming back as something. This can't be right. And then when it became... all too clear that this was the end of the most lovable character in Westeros. Mm. Gutted.
One of my favourite episodes.
I actually, when I read that, I went up on Google and I had a quick... I just Googled, hold the door, and some guy on some forum... There's only one person who I think had worked it out. They hadn't got it exactly right. They thought it had something to do with the Targaryens, but they'd basically... got this whole idea of hold the door blurring into Hodor.
Wow, yeah. That is hugely
impressive.
Read
like they were kind of joking, like was it an actual theory whether it was a gag thing? But I think George mentioned afterwards actually someone had, and I think he pointed people towards that.
Yeah,
which is kind of funny. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
You don't think Hodor is going to come back as a zombie because that would be super upsetting.
Though. He must be, like, because he wasn't burnt alive.
Zombie Christian. So no,
he must be knocking about there somewhere.
I reject this completely. No, not allowed.
I'd love to see him come back with Bran. Oh, so sad.
Oh my gosh.
Like, having to kill zombie Hodor. Oh.
Was he understanding? You spent a lot of time on his back, let's be honest.
Yeah, well,
was
I mean,
good about it?
We were either going to become really good friends or worst enemies with you know, this little 10-year-old strapped to this poor guy's back. But funny, like, the first time I ever met Christian, we were... We were having a fitting for, you know, the sort of knapsack that Bran had on his back. And I was chatting with Christian, and in that way that all, like, young kids do, it's like, oh, have you got any apps on your phone? Can I play on any of your apps? He's like, yeah, I've got this cool Harry Potter spells app. You know, have a go with that. And he said, just don't throw my phone across the car park. So I was playing with it, and then, whoosh, lo and behold... threw his phone straight across our studio car park and smashed it into those pieces. And then watched Christian's strained expression, I think, as he tried not to go completely berserk. But from that day on, after the insurance claim, we were best friends.
Harry, well, who knew about the lost link between Harry Potter and Game of Thrones? Yeah, there had to be one.
Somewhere. I like the idea that there's a link between Westworld and Game of Thrones. Have you heard that thing?
No, what is it?
That Game of Thrones is actually just one of the worlds.
One of the parks.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hilarious.
How cool is that?
That would be an excellent.
And then who would be the robots? Who would be the people who've joined the park?
HBO crossover potential.
Yeah.
This could
Maybe
keep it going for years.
Every single HBO show is a different Westworld world.
It feels that way, actually. Yeah. So what's the... I mean, of all the secrets you have been privy to, what was the hardest one to keep?
I think for everyone it was the whole Jon Snow is coming back to life. I mean, because everyone basically knew as well. It was like... It was the prerequisite for every interview. It was like, so is Jon Snow coming back? No.
Yes, he is.
No.
Look, we know he is. He hasn't cut his hair.
That was the thing, wasn't it? He didn't cut his hair.
And there were pictures of him on set, you know,
like
all these
in
people
Belfast.
With their drones.
It is impossible now, because, like, the internet was a problem for keeping secrets. But now with drones, you can't do anything.
It's a nightmare. Yeah, I mean, I mean, when you've got... It's flattering in a way that people are so focused on this show that they want to know everything about it and they want to know before anyone else. But more than anything, it spoils it for everyone. I mean, the word spoiler really does just mean it ruins it. It's such a shame when you know, I can remember loving shows and then... What show? Oh, yeah, Westworld actually got spoiled for me. I found something online. I'm like, no! Just ruin, like, the biggest twist. And it sucks. It's not fun for anyone.
It's the Americans that are to blame. No offense to them, but it's that we get it on Monday night, and so we have social media blackout all day Monday because they will invariably ruin it for everyone else.
Yeah, well, you just have to avoid social media.
I've just started watching it on a Monday morning, and it's been so much better. It's so great. Honestly, get up first thing, 7 a.m. Watch it, and then you can safely go about your business for the end of the day, for the rest of the day, without having to worry about Game of Thrones being spoiled.
Speaking of knowing things you're not supposed to know, I think it's fairly safe to say that Bran has been the most frustrating character, in that he knows everything and yet has been spectacularly unhelpful.
Well,
this season.
Let me clear some of this up, because it is Bran's power has not been, you know, terrifically well explained, I don't think. How it is basically, it's not like he knows absolutely everything. He just has access to everything at the moment. As I said, it's like he's got this whole Kindle library of all the volumes, but he's reading through bits and pieces, but he hasn't got the whole thing, you know, down to a T yet. And also, there is a... I don't know if I can mention this, but I'm going to. There was a scene that we shot for that last episode where Sansa comes to Bran's chamber, and says, "Bran, I need your help," which kind of helps explain how the three Starks then got together to sort of do little things.
Because he says, "Oh, hang on, sorry, I should have mentioned this. Yeah, he's evil and has always been evil."
But I don't think Bran had got that yet. He just kind of figured out that there was some weirdness there.
Because the Chaos is a Ladder thing is a bit of a tell.
Yeah, definitely. But I think Bran is so focused really on the bigger issue, which is the Night King and the Army of the Dead. Bran is so not bothered about all these petty infighting in Winterfell, because, you know, nuclear war is basically about to descend on...
And because
on
he's the Night King, that would obviously be...
Of course! Yeah, well, you heard it here first.
But it is interesting, because it feels like the whole show is getting a bit that way. It's kind of catching up with Bran in that sense, because, you know, we are coming to a conclusion. I don't think it's a spoiler to say, like, season 8 has to have some kind of conclusion, unless it goes the full Sopranos. Yeah. And, you know, and so, like, we have to stop squabbling about stuff and start having some team-ups.
I thought that was a great way of ending it, with Cersei and Jaime, Jaime finally realising that she is completely fucking mental. What are you going to do?
I mean, something Bran knew about the two of them back in episode 1.
Yeah, I know. Bran's always had secrets about various incestuous relationships with bloody Daenerys and Jon Snow, or rather Aegon Targaryen.
Yeah, fascinating juxtaposition of that scene, you know, because on one hand you had all the people who'd been cheering on Jon Arryn for the last 7 seasons, and then on the other hand you have, at exactly the same time, the revelation that yes, they're definitely related. It was
and he's in bed with creepy Auntie Dani.
Oh,
well, maybe he's creepy nephew John. I mean, let's not assign blame here.
Although I like the very ominous, portentous expression on Peter Dinklage's face when he's sort of looking at the door.
This is not going to end well.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially now we've worked out John is the heir to the Iron Throne. I mean, that is going to be big next season, I suspect. There's going to be a lot of chaos stemming from that.
Lots of this stuff has kind of ramped up in this season. Have you felt, you know, even making this, that the velocity has changed?
Oh, definitely. It was so fast-paced, almost kind of too fast-paced. It's like, whoa, hang on, slow down. Well, where are we now? What's going on? But that's the thing. I think... It's a credit to our showrunners and producers that they're not trying to stretch this story out to another 2, you know, full 10 episode seasons. They recognise that there's not that much left of this story to go, and they acknowledge that it's just going to become. They don't really want to spoil something that's told a story so well, and it's taken so much time to tell it, and I think if we did end up with 2 long seasons again, it would just end up being, you know, too slow and you wouldn't get that explosive finale. It would just be like, oh, you know, is that show ever going to end? definitely season 7 has been so far. Like, every episode there's another big battle or there's some huge revelation. Like, I honestly can't think of a single episode where there wasn't something huge happening. And so season 8, I can only imagine what the hell they're going to do there.
Have you met George R. R. Martin? I'm guessing you must have.
Yeah, I haven't seen him around for a while because I think he's focusing on that new book.
Good.
But no, met him. He's such a charming man and such a great mind. It's really cool to. Yeah, when you actually get to meet him at an event or whatever, you can corner him and ask him all the questions about, you know, his books. Because the show is great because it's kind of diverged into its own thing. Mm. They're both going to surely end in the same kind of way. But it's nice to kind of get involved with the complex world he's made. Because as massive as the Game of Thrones television universe is, it's nothing compared to what George R. R. Martin has created in his head.
Yeah.
So the moment you get to sort of corner him and talk to him about it all is always really cool.
It's fascinating because we've had him on this very podcast, in fact.
Oh, cool.
And he's often said he's more of a gardener as a writer. He makes it up as he goes along and it unfolds before him. So I think he knows where he's going, but he never really knows how he's going to get there.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
It might well deviate quite wildly from where you guys are going on the show.
And I think that's quite nice, actually, because, you know, the books are such a cult thing as it is. You almost don't want them to end up being sort of spoilt, as it were, by the television show. So I think it's quite nice that the two can be their own things whilst, you know, inextricably linked.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Was there a cast member that you regret not working with? Because I'm guessing there's some people who just never crossed paths with.
One of my best mates I met on this show with Dean Charles Chapman, who played Tommen Baratheon, and I would have loved to have got to have a scene with him. That would have been so much fun, just purely selfishly. But anyone else? I mean, I'm hoping there's going to be a Jamie Brann reunion. Mm-hmm. I think that would be really, really cool, especially since he's headed, hopefully, north now.
It seems like that's got to come.
I think that would be really, really cool.
Yeah. One can only imagine
nice
how
reunion.
Given how freaked out Littlefinger was, I feel like
would
be.
Exactly, can you imagine how scared Bran could make him? Yeah, he could really question his morals.
When are you, do you know when you're starting shooting again?
I think in the next few months. Mm. I think it'll start kick off, but we've had no scripts yet. We haven't had.
Winter in Belfast. All right.
I'm starting to think we're not going to get anything. I honestly think it might be like. I remember they did that EastEnders episode years back where someone got killed. Not that I watched it, I just remember this because it was like a live episode. But three different characters. One of the characters. Oh, it was who killed someone. I can't remember. But they all got different scripts. So, and then on the night, they said. They said which one was actually going to be the killer. So I feel like that might happen.
They did that as far back as Empire Strikes Back, where they didn't give them the actual. It said Obi-Wan Kenobi was your father. That was the line Dave Prowse
really
read out, and only James Earl Jones had the real line. So they didn't want that getting out. And didn't even have the internet then. So can't be too careful. But there's, I mean, we don't even know when we're going to see the new season yet. I mean, there's lots of people saying that might not be till 2019.
It's going to be a while, I think,
which will kill me.
People are going to be like, Game of what? What was that thing?
Remember this show?
No, I remember that. That unfinished.
Really retro, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. I think the level of excitement for it will be monumental, but I think having to wait 2 years.
It's fine. It'll only give other people a chance to catch up and, you know, get where we are. It'll be good.
So season 7, what do you think, if you actually had to pick a best scene for this season, what do you reckon it'd be?
I mean, just in terms of the pure visual effects, I like bringing the wall down was insane. That and just what that means for us now. I mean, this is the massive unstoppable ice wall, you know, that has stood for millennia, you know, one of the key features of Westeros. The fact that has now come down is epic, is totally terrifying for everyone.
Can I tell you my personal theory? It's come down without injuring in any way Tormund.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who, spoiler, is Helen's favourite character.
Like, that's really important. I feel like we get that established. So
it's funny, isn't it? Because everyone wonders what the Night King's been doing for 7 seasons when he's got to be like 300 yards away from the wall. And then, of course, he was just waiting for someone to give him a dragon, because otherwise there was no way past it.
Yeah.
Except,
I mean, I think the Night King is pretty similar to Daenerys in many ways. Like, started off, we saw in that first episode, you catch a glimpse of one White Walker, and that's clearly, you know, there aren't many of them. In the same way that Daenerys is, you know, back then hasn't even thought about getting an army together. And then as the seasons go on, it becomes clearer and clearer that an army is being built, and they're pretty epic. And, you know, Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Dragons and the Night King. I don't know. I feel like...
bit of foreshadowing.
I feel like, yeah, that's
although,
a thing.
Although, they did show you that shot of Eastwatch by the sea, and it showed you the wall extending, what, 300 metres into the water?
Yeah.
And no one ever heard of a boat. I'm just saying. You could have totally gone around it.
If the Night King can organise the zombies to get all those chains to bring the bloody dragon out, surely they just could build
I think we've established that that zombies can't swim. I mean, I think that seems to be... canon.
And you're throwing their sort of seamanship skills into...
I am questioning their ability to
swim. Maybe they're terrified of water.
Maybe they're just like, they get really waterlogged and just kind of sink.
Yeah.
Or dissolve or something.
Oh, yeah. Ice and water.
That's it. It's
going to be epic.
And how about you? Are you looking forward to life after Thrones? Are you slightly dreading it? How are you feeling?
I mean, the end of secure yearly employment is going to be slightly concerning. But... no, it'll be nice. I mean, I think it's definitely run its course. And I think it's time to make way for other aspects of the Game of Thrones world.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with these prequel ideas and all the other spin-offs they have in the works. But it's just going to be a very odd thing not being a part of it anymore, because it's not there anymore. It's been such a regular fixture of my life and of everyone's lives, from the crew who have literally... like, people have, when it first started, were just trainees. They'd never been involved in the film industry before. And now, you know, they're producers. Mm. And it's meant so much to so many people. And it's been such a vehicle for so many different people's careers. And there have been babies from Game... there are so many Game of Thrones babies from people who have met on the set... and so it's going to be like finishing school again. It's going to be like a really it's going to be really sad.
Wow.
Speaking of which, are you off to uni this year? Or
I am, in the next few. I've got so many preparations to do. I haven't thought about it much yet, but I am off.
Is it going to be fresh this week? You'll have a badge saying, "Hi, I'm Isaac, don't ask me about season 8.
Oh god, I know. I'm looking forward to it, but also there's going to be so much Game of Thrones chatter. It'll be fun though. Yeah.
Maybe everyone will really ostentatiously not mention it for like months.
They'll just think he looks so much like that
guy. Night King. He looks so much like the Night King.
And on that ridiculous note, we should probably draw this up. Isaac, thank you so much for coming in. Look forward to season 8.
No, thank you for having me.
And Freshers Week.
Woo!
A final question.
Okay.
As the Three-Eyed Raven, what will this week's EuroMillions be?
Five. Wait, is that... yeah, no, five. Seven. Actually, no. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Because that's actually just as likely as any other combination.
Statistically, that is
that's
true.
What made me... like, because I always used to do the lottery and think, oh, maybe this could happen. And I was like, oh, no, might as well get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So, there you go. That's
okay.
It's just as likely as any other prediction.
If I win, I'll split it with you.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Isaac Hempstead Wright. Good chat?
It was a good chat. He couldn't tell us any spoilers because he doesn't know any. But nevertheless...
You'll notice, actually, at the moment, all of the Game of Thrones cast are doing lots of interviews.
Mm.
I've seen over the last couple of days, you know, Brienne's been talking, Tormund's been talking. They have real names as well, but we don't care. and they're finally able to actually talk about the show because we've now seen season 7, so they can discuss that. But they haven't read the scripts for season 8, so they can't spoil it. So it's this rare golden opportunity to actually discuss things.
Of course, that's what they say. But they're actors, Helen.
They could be acting.
They could be acting.
No,
or professional liars is the term I prefer to use. So the guy who plays Tormund, whose name is?
Christopher. And I can't pronounce his surname. I apologise. He's Norwegian.
Christopher O'Hara, I think we've agreed on, haven't we?
I believe we have, yes.
He takes Helen's name. Is that how it works?
Absolutely. He's a wildling.
He's a wildling. They do things differently north
Helen
of the
is his spear wife. That's not a euphemism.
So you like a bit of the old Tormund, eh?
No, I just think he's a great character. Also, okay. Yes.
Yeah, all right. So there's been a lot of speculation. We will have questions. A lot of you have been sliding into my DMs and sending us in questions about the season of Game of Thrones. And we'll be getting those in a second. But certainly one of the big cliffhangers, in fact, the big cliffhanger at the end of the episode is Tormund.
Yeah.
And
Beric.
Beric, yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't, I think, kill those two. I don't think they'd kill those two off screen.
Right. What's he been saying in interviews?
He's worried that he's buried under a ton of ice, I think.
Well, that wouldn't be good, would it?
No, it would be bad. it would. Yeah, I think, I mean, the last we saw of them was the wall crumbling behind them, but they were still moving away from the crumbling bit. They could make their way along the top of the wall to Castle Black, theoretically, but they've still got an army of
the
dead,
like
potentially.
Isn't that like 50 miles?
Yes, it is, yes. and what kind of a, you know, reception they'll find at Castle Black, we don't know. Mm. So things are not maybe shiny for them right now, mm-hmm. but they're also not definitely dead.
So is this a show on which you need to see the body?
I mean, more than. You need to see the beheading and the burning and the spreading of the ash. That's true, we didn't. But we can count on Brienne to get the job done, whereas I don't think we can count on Viserion to get the job done, because he's named after a rat bastard, and I think he's kind of a turncoat himself. And you know.
Loving Chris's expression at the moment. Oh, yeah, no, he is.
Viserion the dragon, who was turned by the Night King.
Speak to me as you would a small child.
Is named after Daenerys' Ratfink brother, Viserys, who was terrible.
That motherfucker.
I'm going to get this out of the way now, because otherwise we're all just going to be waiting for it. But you know nothing, Chris Hewitt.
Yes.
It had to happen.
If it doesn't happen at least one more time in this podcast, I'll be very, very upset. Because I've not watched Game of Thrones.
No, you are the one.
I am. But no, there's loads of other people. I know lots of people who haven't seen
Game
of Thrones.
It is actually true. I was actually discussing this with someone earlier this week. I was trying to explain the appeal of it, and with a pie chart and the graphs, lines, stickers, props, dragons, small dogs. Yeah. And I remember, of course I said, there's the theory that Bran is in fact the Night King, to which he responded, who the fuck is the Night King?
Who's this person?
Hmm? One of the very few people, one of your ilk, who has never seen Game of Thrones.
But they knew who Bran was.
They knew who Isaac Hempstead Wright was. Presumably they like the box trolls.
Isn't it a bit like, I don't know, isn't it a bit like saying, I don't own a TV, actually, saying I don't watch Game of Thrones?
Well, humble brag.
It's a little bit, yeah.
I don't watch Game of Thrones.
It's like a little bit, I'm just so...
There's loads of shows I don't watch.
Yeah.
No, I know, yeah.
You know, Made in Chelsea is on, so I really have no need to
watch. No, I don't watch that shit, mate. No. Not when Blue Bloods is on the other side. What is Tom Selleck going to get up to this episode?
Awful dinner sequences. If I watched them have one more meal together.
It's the...
Christ!
That part of the show, that part of Blue Bloods is absolutely awful. I don't think I've met a character I want to crush under a fridge more than the granddad on Blue Bloods.
I feel like, possibly, and this is just a suggestion, we might be getting a smidge off topic.
Well, listen, if you can talk about Wheel of Time, I can talk about Blue Bloods.
In the last episode of in the last episode of Blue Bloods, there was a surprising sequence where the
ice dragon
took his face off and it was Arya Stark, and the rest of the family fell down dead because she just poisoned them all. Well, so that was an interesting crossover.
Let's talk about that, because that was the opening of season 7.
And one of the best moments.
And one of the absolute best moments. Arya Stark poisoning not just Lord Frey, she'd obviously already done that off camera.
All of the Freys.
The entire house, and it was super satisfying and just brilliantly done. And it really kind of set the tone for the season. It's like, finally, some of the worst people in Westeros might get their comeuppance just a little bit.
The Freys were world-class bastards.
Yeah.
I mean, in a show full of bastards, they were the bastards. They are, Chris, responsible for the Red Wedding.
Yes, I'm aware of it.
Where
as Robin. You know, James, this is the thing. I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I do read the spoilers.
Yeah, so you probably know more about it than most, but you've never really seen it.
I have a working knowledge of who people are.
Yeah.
So I know that, you know, it's generally bad to be a Stark, especially in the early part of the show.
Yeah.
I know that they've never really talked about their weird rich cousin Tony, who can fly around. But I'm expecting him to come in season 8 at some point.
Yeah.
Helen and I were talking beforehand, and I speculated that wouldn't it be awesome if this turned out to be a prequel to the Marvel Cinematic Universe in some way, and that one of the dragons is actually Fin Fang Foom. That would be amazing. Ends up fighting Iron Man at the end.
No one but you would see that coming.
So it's going to end with them on the Iron Throne, but then there'll be the words, there must always be a Stark in Winterfell, which is a thing. You'll pan up to the north and Stark Tower will have been erected in the ashes of Winterfell.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
Okay. I'm aware of some stuff, so I know what the Red Wedding is.
Yeah, so the phrase, who perpetrated that, Arya poisons them all. She invites them all, pretend, because she's now a faceless man.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
A magic assassin. Mm-hmm. I particularly like Arya's arc, generally, because she's gone from this little girl, little sort of like tomboy girl, to a badass motherfucker. Like, and I just love the line when someone says, who's protecting Arya? And Brienne says something along the lines of, the only one who needs protecting is anyone who gets in her way, mm-hmm. Which I thought was great, because literally Maisie's about 4 foot or something, but a little demon.
And her little fight with Brienne was great, actually.
God, yes.
Really cool.
Really, really good. Just the expression on her face, that little cocky, I'm so good at own you face. very, very good.
Okay, so we should take some questions?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to take these in the order in which they were sent. So some questions will probably double up. So if your question doesn't get read out, it's not because it was rubbish. It's because someone beat you to the punch. So here we go. This is from Connor Keneally asks, if it was a Game of Thrones sitcom spinoff where two characters moved into an apartment in modern-day New York City, which two characters would you pick and why? Not really pertaining to the spoiler special, but it's the first one we got.
Littlefinger and Varys.
Why?
Because they'd be like, and think of it as kind of a modern Odd Couple updating, and they would plot the downfall of, you know, everyone.
Okay. Hmm. Not so much of a sitcom.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Could be quite funny.
All right.
I mean, I have to say, you know, after the second last episode, Beyond the Wall, I think maybe the Hound and Tormund. Yes, Tormund. Uh-huh. No, but he was the funniest thing in that episode by quite a long way. And you'd have Brienne coming in as a guest star, and he'd just make goo-goo eyes at her like the entire time, and she would ignore him like the entire time, and it'd be great.
I think it very much depends on whether it's on network television or cable. Because if it's on cable, then I'm all about the Hound being in it, because no one says fuck off or quite like Roy McCann. Yeah,
and there's the explicit warning label.
Thank you, Apple.
On the old iTunes.
His ability for delivering caustic expletives is extraordinary. Love him.
It's interesting because I watched this episode. I think the last episode I watched, and you'll get a kick out of this. I watched it because I hosted a Q&A afterwards.
What?
You're a monster. You're an
absolute
monster.
And it was Hard Home. It was
yes.
Big undead
that
party.
Was an amazing episode, and
yes,
I thought this episode was great as well. And everything I've seen of Game of Thrones is great. It's just the more I go on not watching it, I have to sit down, I have to set aside 67 hours, and my wife doesn't really feel like it's going to be her kind of show, so I'm not...
I mean, look, we are at peak TV, we all have to make these decisions. You've made the wrong one.
You don't watch... One of you doesn't watch Better Call Saul. I watch Better... Is that... Or do you both watch
it? I started it, but left it for now.
Similar to Helen, I kind of got bored.
Everyone can't watch everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although James gives it a damn good go.
I do, actually. I've seen an extraordinary amount of shit.
Okay. But yeah, the Hound wasn't in Hard Home, I think, which is what I was saying.
No, he probably wasn't. No, this was before, because he was, in inverted commas, dead for quite some time, before becoming unearthed again by Ian McShane.
Okay. Lovejoy.
Yeah. Yeah. It tracked him down.
Yeah.
It was astonishing. Toughest case yet.
An antique. Amazing. All right, the Peter Monday asks, should the last episode get a cinema release to deal with the scale that they have teased?
Hmm.
Because they're talking about they're saying that every episode of the truncated, it's only, what, 6 episodes?
Yeah, I believe so.
In
6 feature-length episodes.
Season 8 will all be feature-length. Mm. But do you feel that the show should make that transition? Because even though, and again, coming to it fresh,
sure.
I thought the effects were pretty damn good. I mean, they've got the dragon CG down pretty much, I would say. I don't know whether it's always been that good. I don't know whether the Compulsidium was always that decent.
It's always been good. It has got better. Weirdly, I think the more impressive effect shots are the ones you don't see, the sort of extensions, because there's lots of videos on YouTube where they show you this is the set or this is the location shoot and then this is what it appears like. Just the way they turn the locations into King's Landing or, you know,
wherever else they are in any particular moment.
Mm. Yeah, I think that kind of invisible effects work is stunning.
Like Dragonstone, like the externals for Dragonstone are incredible.
They're really, really impressive.
And certainly, Hardhome was projected onto a cinema screen and did look pretty amazing. When
I'd love to see it on a big screen.
I think they might, because it is a big event, and I think we're starting to see a bit more of that. Obviously, The Inhumans is going to be an interesting test case, and I imagine HBO will be watching that quite carefully, the little IMAX release of that.
But that would be interesting, though, wouldn't it? Because my understanding, I mean, people keep talking about what's the biggest show on TV, and in terms of viewing figures, you know, obviously it's HBO, it's premium cable, but it gets a lot of viewers, Game of Thrones.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because it is the biggest TV show ever made in terms of, I think, impact, significance, and obsession. But if you look at pure viewing figures, obviously, because it's cable, it's not close to the kind of the you know, the incredible. Well, what's the highest rated TV show ever? Was it? It's going to be something like the MASH
finale of MASH.
The MASH finale. Like that, yeah. So it won't even come close to those kind of figures.
No.
Yeah. Or Blue Bloods.
But then equally,
the average episode of Blue Bloods. Yeah.
The average dinner scene from Blue Bloods. But it is the most pirated show on the internet. So you actually, I wonder whether we have any clue what the actual viewing figures are.
Well, I think its influence, its reach is greater. No one's coming into the office in the morning and going, "Did you see Blue Bloods last night? Oh my God, Donnie Wahlberg. You're not going to believe this. He cracked a case."
I don't understand why this is the comparison.
Well, it's a show that's on my mind. Or Bake Off, right? But people come in and talk about Bake Off.
People do come in and talk
about
Bake Off.
Blue Bloods, all right? But water cooler talk. And one of the reasons why I can keep up with Game of Thrones is because you come into the office and you're always talking about it. But did you see that? Blah, 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 blah. And having been around when you spoiled The Wire liberally for people, I figured I'd get ahead of the curve in this one. But this show obviously has a bigger cultural reach. It may not match the viewing figures of something like a Blue Bloods or a
Bake Off
or an NCIS or a Bake Off, but culturally it seems to be having a bigger impact.
But I find that fascinating because fantasy has long been the kind of redheaded stepchild of, you know, genre. And Lord of the Rings, the film Lord of the Rings, not the books, did an extraordinary amount to sort of drag it kicking and screaming from, you know, the basement of Forbidden Planet to the mainstream. And I think it's no longer a dirty word. It's no longer embarrassing to say, "I read fantasy, I like fantasy," whereas it very much was, I think, before Peter Jackson put those films out. So it's really funny to me, because when they said they were adapting this, part of me was just like, "Don't do that, because it's mine and I don't want you people getting in on my action," because I like it and I'm cool and fuck you all. But also I thought, well, no one's going to watch this because it's going to be a massive, sprawling, dynastic, incest-filled fantasy. You know, who's going to watch that? And the answer, of course, was everyone.
Everyone. I think that's part of what made it work. I think it's part of how fantasy has evolved since Tolkien. I think Tolkien established modern fantasy. Mm. He took it away from fairy tales and established what we think of as the fantasy genre, really genuinely goes back to him and C.S. Lewis. But it's been the progression of that since, and I think Robert Jordan was part of that, but I think George R. R. Martin, who's a good friend of his, of course, took it another step further and introduced more complexity, more arguments, more disagreement and turmoil and mess into it and sort of moral murkiness. I mean, Tolkien's fantasy world is very them and us, good and bad, clear delineation between the two. Mm-hmm. And that's what fantasy's been moving away from really ever since.
Yeah, because Jordan's the same, isn't it? It's very much dualism so. Is just runs all the way through. It's light and dark. It's very good and evil.
No, but even then, there's, you know, it's not just the Chosen One doesn't get on a horse and go, "Follow me," and everyone follows him. It's politics and exchange and compromise and delay and infighting and all that kind of stuff. And I think that went a little way further, and this has gone further still.
But modern fantasy Germany has kind of entered a phase, and people kind of reductively call it grimdark, but that's actually daft. It's in a, like, moral ambiguity seems to permeate fantasy these days. And I think nothing really sums it up quite as well as Martin's books, where, you know, like Cersei was, "Oh, she's a villain," but she's not. And we were having this argument in the office where Phil was saying, "Well, she's clearly a psychopath." And I'm like, "No, that's really reductive. She's not a psychopath at all. She is morally very flexible, but you have to understand the world she lives in, the way she brought up, what her goals are, what her immediate situation is." And it comes across in the books very well, where in, I believe it's in A Feast for Crows, you first get chapters from her viewpoint and you see the character completely differently because you start to understand her inner life. And she's not a two-dimensional villain. She's a complex character who's very, very ruthless and prepared to do anything she has to do to protect her family. That's not to say I necessarily condone a lot of the stuff she does, but you know, there's an element of empathy there, and I think that's important.
There is a little bit of an oversight, I think, in this series, which is dealing with the loss of Tommen. And I don't think there's been much sign of that. You got the impression almost that she was glad he was gone because she was on the throne. And I think that's wrong. And I think it doesn't chime with what we know about the character before. Yeah. And it doesn't chime about what, her stated objectives, at least, assuming this pregnancy is real, assuming that she's not using it to somehow play her brothers. It doesn't fit with her going forward particularly. It's weird. And I do think that's a little bit of an oversight on her part. Having said that, I mean, there was an interesting article on, I want to say Politico, but I could be wrong. I'm just going to look it up. It was on Vox, talking about each of the characters this season ranked by political science, ranked by their success as politicians. And spoiler for the article, their number one with a bullet is Cersei, because she starts off with an extremely weak hand at the beginning of this season, and she finishes it still on the Iron Throne. Okay, she's lost Jaime, but apart from that, she's doing pretty well. She's got the Iron Bank on side. She's got the Golden Company, we think, arriving. Things seem to be doing okay. She's removed Dorne. She's removed
House Tyrell is
House
gone.
Tyrell. She's split up the Iron Fleet. You know, she's doing okay.
Yeah, I must admit, she's. But then they always said, and it's dwelt a lot in the books, she was always really Tywin's daughter.
Like, yes.
She was, very much cut in his mold. And there's a whole section of the books, I don't think it's in the show, where she talks about she has a real bitterness that she was born a woman. That if she'd been a man, she would have been the heir. She would have been his natural heir to everything, because she's just like her father.
Mm. And she's the eldest of the three.
Yes, you're right, she is. By seconds.
Mm. Hence the whole Valonqar thing.
I see now. Isn't that right, Chris?
Fully on board.
Yeah, I mean, Maggie the Frog, she knew what she was talking about, didn't she?
The singing frog?
She may have sang.
Oh, okay. I'm fully on board with that. From the outside looking in, this is you guys having chats about the season and what's happening and what's potentially going to happen going forward. And reading some stuff online as well, it seems to me that there's a... because fans like to predict what's happening.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, from the outside looking in, that a show that made its bones on being completely unpredictable and bumping people off left, right and centre is now largely predictable. A lot of people are safe, so to speak, until next season.
I think there's truth in that, but the only reason I will say there's truth in it is this. When George R. R. Martin pitched this to HarperCollins, he sent a letter which is framed on the wall of the offices of HarperCollins.
Yes.
And it has been photographed, it has gone on the internet. A lot of it is redacted, but his end game did and does involve the characters who are still living. And it talked about how they will... I mean, I think you always knew Daenerys, Jon Snow, Tyrion were going to make it through to the end. That said, in his original pitch, Jon Snow was going to end up shagging Arya. So, I mean, he has... I'm serious. He's deviated quite heavily from where he thought he was going to go. But I think he always had it in his head that Jon is the last Targaryen, she's the other last Targaryen, that at some point they would come together in that way. You know, whether or not they marry, whether or not one kills each other, who knows? Uh-huh. But I think he always had an end point. But he, you know, they say there are plotters and pantsers in terms of writing. He is a pantser or a gardener, as he calls himself. So he does make it up as he goes along. He has an idea of where he's going. He has no clue how he gets there. So mm-hmm. the characters take on an inner life, which is quite... So what's interesting, he says, about to bore your tits off, the reason there was such a long gap originally between Storm of Swords and Feast for Crows is there was going to be a time jump. So Arya was going to cock off to Braavos to become an assassin. And I think you were going to have a leap in time at that point where you were going to pick up maybe 5-10 years later. You know, so all the training would be done and you'd carry on. And I think he had real difficulty writing that narrative with the chronological jump. Mm. And he tried and tried and tried for many, many, many months, couldn't do it. So in the end said, fuck it, I'm going to go back and just write that piece of time. Mm. And he said that's why it took him so long to get A Feast for Crows done. Quite what his excuse is this time, I'm not entirely sure, but that is...
But of course, as we all know, George R. R. Martin is not our bitch, and therefore we don't get...
I mean, Christ, it takes me 2 weeks to write a feature, so I can't really moan about him taking 5 years to write a...
What's the latest update? Where is he now?
The next book, The Winds of Winter, is TBC.
It still might beat the next season. Possibly, the next season is 2019, has been rumoured.
I mean, the fact is, he hasn't delivered the manuscript. So until he has, we'll have... And realistically, he'll deliver the manuscript, and then we've got, what, you think maybe 6 months until publication? So...
Yeah, and that's them going fast, by the way. That is a very accelerated process, because, of course, they've got no reason to sit on it.
Yeah, they will drop everything and then work on that. So I think you've got a 6-month turnaround. But when will he deliver the manuscript? I don't know.
So how much are we expecting his next book to follow where the show's gone?
I don't think it will.
A little bit. I think there'll be overlap. He had a conversation with Wise and Benioff about what his vision of the end game was. He's had, you know, that's... We know that. They did it after season 4 or something.
Yeah, so he's given them the breadcrumbs.
He's given them the sort of the trail, the path. Uh-huh. So presumably, much of that remains the same. He may well have tweaked it in the writing, because again, things may have changed in the writing because that's the way he works. But there's going to be some similarities. Already, certain characters have diverged massively. So we can assume that those divergences probably, you know, are reflected in some degree in the book. But for example, there are things like there is another Aegon Targaryen in the books, who's possibly an imposter, we assume. And that's not been a thing at all in the show. And probably, I think we can safely say at this point, will not be, because that would be a completely unnecessary diversion.
Yeah, there's lots of threads left sort of dangling, which they deliberately haven't picked up. But then also, I think like the Winds of Winter will probably be quite similar, because he'd written a lot of that.
Yes.
And he'll have shown a lot of that to Weiss and Benioff. But after that, I think it will start to deviate more wildly.
It's interesting because, you know, I've read a lot of theories where a lot of people seem to know what's going to happen, or they seem to have guessed what's going to happen, or, you know, their best guess. So a lot of I've read lots of pieces about how it's obvious that Jaime is going to kill Cersei, and that's just the way it's going to be, and that's going to be his last stand, and finally he's going to turn against his hot sister, and you know, and Jon Snow and Dany are going to end up somehow together, ruling together as aunt and nephew. Fuck's going on there. But what do you think? Do you think it's going to deviate? Do you think there's going to be some surprises in season 8?
Yes.
Do you think Bran is the Night King?
No.
Okay.
I think there will be a three-way dragon fight. I think Jon will end up bonding with Rhaegal, because it makes sense, named after his dad, and that they will end up flying the dragons against the Night King dragon, and there's going to be a big old dragon fight. Great. I'm very excited.
This somewhat makes up for the fact that still no one has adapted Temuera for me, so that's super good.
I'm
reading the last one of those at the moment.
So good. Dragon books, brilliant. I think there will be tension between Dany and Jon when the truth of his heritage comes out. I think they will probably work through that by fighting the Night King together.
But Helen, why would there be tension when he's just been in bed with creepy Auntie Dany?
Hey, why is she the creepy one? They're both creepy.
She's his creepy aunt. You know, that's proper yew tree right there.
To her, not the...
They're the same age. Victim blaming,
are we? They're the same age,
Chris.
Victim blaming. Why is he the victim here?
He's her poor little nephew.
They're the same age. He might even be older. Anyway.
Age doesn't matter. Is that what you're saying, Helen? Unbelievable.
That's not what I'm saying. You're a weirdo.
What's happening? What is happening? Technically speaking, it's also necrophilia.
What? That's true.
He's her zombie nephew. This is wrong on so many levels.
This is wrong, yeah. So anyway, I think there will be tension between them, and because her whole thing for 7 years has been, I'm the heir to the Iron Throne. If she isn't, then what? So I can see some tension there. I hope that we're going to find out what Melisandre's been up to. I hope we're going to find out, we're ever going to see Ilaria again. I'm not sure about that. If we're ever going to see Yara again, seems likely after Theon's reaction last time. It's kind of all to play for. I mean, much as I adore him, I do think people like Tormund on that level probably not going to have a great season next year. If we're going to make some sacrifices, it's probably going to be those people.
You don't think he and the Maid of Tarth will...
No, I don't think she feels the same way about him.
I think
poor guy needs a hug.
I think he will grow in her affections much as he has in yours.
Ah, but Jaime's headed back to her, and they've always had a bit of a frisson.
That is true.
Although, is it a comradely frisson or a romantic frisson? I don't know. So many frissons.
Yeah, there's a lot of frissing there.
Now, the frissons are a family, right?
In so good, Chris,
they were wiped out at the Blue Wedding, I believe. Should we get some questions?
Sure.
Okay, and then we might finish off. I might go character by character as best as I can at the end and ask you where you think they're going to end up ultimately. But that's crack on with some questions. This is from Josh A. Reynolds, who cheats by asking a bunch of questions. What will Jamie's role be in the next season? That's one. Let's go with that.
It's going to be interesting because I don't know what kind of reception he's going to get up north. I think Brienne will definitely speak for him, but I don't know if he will be welcomed with open arms. And the whole thing about, oh, everyone saying, oh, we know that Jaime's going to kill Cersei. Well, we don't. First of all, there's two suspects. She has two brothers. Second of all, if he's now north and she is determined not to get involved, then when do they meet again? It'll be interesting to see how that happens and also what motive he has. It seems like he knows about every time she's betrayed him now, mm-hmm. and his reaction was to leave. It was not to kill her. So I'm not sure that that feels natural anymore. But then again, it doesn't feel natural with Tyrion either. She's going to have to do something really outrageous, I think, to get either two of her brothers to that point.
I don't think Tyrion will. I think he's done quite a lot already. I'm not sure I'd put that on him. I think that makes sense for it to be Jaime, but who knows? Maybe she'll die on the battlefield.
I thought it was quite interesting at this episode, and again, I'm coming to this as a newbie, had two scenes where Cersei had her brothers basically saying, kill me. Okay, go ahead and give the order and kill me.
Well, they were quoting Predator.
She couldn't do it.
Come on, I'm here, do it now!
Come on, kill me!
Kill me!
I think Jaime said get to the chopper a few times. I thought that,
they almost dared her, and she did stop short of it. And so there is still some kind of really deeply wrong and twisted love in that family. And
is it wrong and twisted, or is it just I'm not going to kill my brother?
Jaime and Cersei, it's pretty wrong and twisted. It's not unwrong and untwisted between her and Tyrion either.
Okay.
Right now, at the end of season 7, it doesn't feel natural that either of them would kill her. That's not to say that that can't change because she is capable of monstrous things.
Who's to say she's even going to die, right?
Well, that's the truth. I mean, Bran's theory is that the Iron Throne is the greatest red herring in history and they could just leave her on it and ignore her all of next season.
So it's a red herring because the real story is it turns into The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Okay. Another question from Josh Reynolds. If a white can be killed with fire, shouldn't the ice dragon be semi-easy to kill too? Emphasis, I guess, on semi. It was like, is it flying around? Is it a fucking dragon? Are you going to kill it? Well, unless you had some other flying thing that had fire.
Well, here's a question. Isn't dragon skin presumably somewhat immune to dragon fire? And might that not make it more difficult for them to kill it?
Quite possibly.
So we don't know.
Also,
there is the point that during that particular sequence beyond the wall, they could have ended the entire thing right there had they just breathed fire on the Night King.
He was right there.
He was right there. It was, I mean, that whole episode was wonderful, obviously, from a Tormund point of view, and terrible from a logic point of view. Like, just awful. Obviously, a lot has been said about the total lack of respect for distance and time that episode displayed.
We had many questions about that.
It is funny, isn't it, that of all the things that happened this season, the most controversial thing was what is the airspeed of a raven?
Of an unladen raven.
Yeah. How tired would it be? How long would it have to stop?
African or European raven.
It is. I mean, but I think this is, it's part of what Thrones has done. It's made people take fantasy seriously enough that it's like, okay, well, we buy the dragons. That's fine. Those are safe. They're in the bank. But we're not sure about the distance between Dragonstone and the wall.
Yeah. It's like our undead hero and his guy with the magic flaming sword are surrounded by the living dead and they need some dragons to come and breathe fire on them to save them. But it's ridiculous how fast this raven flies.
Well, this is
people love to nitpick. That's the whole thing of these shows. I mean, it's the same thing. Like, Thor has Thor has a magic hammer. That's fine, totally fine. Get it? He's fighting the dark elves.
I'm sure,
totally cool with that. What do you mean he's got to Greenwich from Charing Cross without using the DLR? What the hell is going on?
I mean, if he was on a train, that would be one thing. But come on, he's clearly on a tube. Yeah. Makes no sense.
Yeah. Took me completely out of the film.
But it does take you out a little bit because you have spent 7 years watching these people take a really long time to get from A to B, where A and B are distances apart. And so it did feel very wrong and out of place, quite frankly. Having said that, you know, we kind of needed her to get there in time to save them, and ice doesn't take that long to ice in winter. So,
but then do you remember when Sam left the wall to go to Old Town?
Remember it,
Mason,
and it took
like
my brain.
A season for him to get to Old Town, and then he got back in half an episode.
Yeah, that's because he was powered by his powers of mansplaining.
Yes, he was.
Let me tell you about mansplaining. Right?
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, last question for Josh Reynolds, because we can't let him monopolise this podcast. That's James's job. Do you think we'll actually see the Golden Company, and could this see the return of Dario? I love Dario.
Dario Naharis is, yeah.
He's not part of the Golden Company. No, he's not. Captain of the Second Sun.
I know he is, but there is a have you not heard the theory?
No, go for it.
The theory is Cersei hires the Golden Company, and she's all like, hey, I got some mercenaries, I'm going to win the war, y'all. And then it turns out Dario is in charge of the Golden Company, and what? Switcheroo, they're fighting for Dany because, you know, he's still got the hots for her, and she probably has the hots for him because if you've seen him, so that's the theory.
I haven't, no.
He's so. Michael Huseman, and he's very, very handsome.
He has
this
two.
Is just Helen objectifying the male cast
really
of Game
I'm
of Thrones,
just
isn't
pointing
it?
Out, you pointed out how hot Cersei is.
No, I was talking from Jamie's point of view.
Well, there you go. I'm just talking from the point of view of Dany.
He thinks of her as his hot sister.
He's only got one sister. Why would he add a descriptor?
Because he's...
Anyway.
He's stroking her on the side, isn't he? Trying to keep it PG-13. You've already said cunt to motherfucker and all sorts. I'm trying to be a good person here. All right.
Ship has sailed.
It really has.
At the speed of a
Anyway, rating. I'm just saying...
With Euron Greyjoy aboard, no doubt.
Oh, there
very
you go.
Good, very good.
I'm just saying, if the head of the Golden Company turns up and he's wearing a helmet or otherwise covering his face...
Then it's Dario.
Then it's probably Dario.
Okay. Dario, who has been recast, lest we forget.
Yes. To Michael Huseman, not from Michael Huseman.
Yeah. Who was he before? Just some guy with like a melted face. Who was he?
He was originally played by Ed Skrein, and then he left to do the Transporter.
Well, why wouldn't you?
I mean,
it's a career opportunity. Okay, so who did Finn Jones play in Game of Thrones, and is he still alive?
Finn Jones,
Iron Fist, Danny.
Oh,
Rand.
Finn Jones. He played one of the Tyrells.
Was he Loras?
Is he dead? Is he alive?
He's super dead.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he got the iron fist cut into his forehead, and then Cersei blew him up.
Yeah.
He just basically, I am the immortal. It was every defender's haters' dream come true.
The other hate watching that on a GIF on a loop. At Lee Richards asks, my question for you, well, the others, is what exactly is the zombie dragon breathing? Is it ice, blue fire? Something else?
Some kind of plasma, maybe? I don't know. It's very unclear.
Seems
I genuinely...
blue fire.
I thought they might do an ice-breathing dragon in the style of How to Train Your Dragon 2, but he does appear to be breathing some kind of...
Zombie fire.
Yeah.
Witchfire.
Witchfire. That works in Elmo's fire. I don't know. One of those kind of things.
Yep. It's... there you go.
But it clearly has force. It's like it's like Cyclops, isn't it? Yeah, like he isn't... His eye beams are not fire, they're force.
But it's heat as well, because obviously it's melting, I think, as well as...
Well,
smashing.
It seemed
to be.
Do you think it was melting as well? Smashing.
Well, I think it was.
So, because obviously the wall is made of ice and it does bring it down, so it could have been concussive force. But I would say there's probably some heat to it because, you know, it makes sense. What with it also being fire, but
we'd like to apologise for the high nerd levels of this podcast.
Because I think if I push his imaginary glasses up nose, since the wall is spell forged and designed specifically to prevent the undead from passing beneath it, even if they've been able to like smash a hole in it, they could not have gone through. So. If they had never taken the dragons north of the wall, they would never have been in any danger from the Night King.
All right.
Hilarious.
See, that's why you're on the podcast, to give us that information. Not to talk about Wheel of Time.
Which is great.
Yeah, but so is Blue Bloods, Helen. Don't get me started.
It is great, definitely, when Brandon Sanderson takes over.
Jamie Rumble. That's not a description of what happens in season 8. This is someone's question. Jamie Rumble asks, my question is, what do you guys think was up with Tyrion at the end of the show? Do you think he came to a deal with his sister in the rest of that meeting between him that wasn't on screen? Someone else has asked a question along those lines as well. I've seen some readings of that scene at the end. That Tyrion is not happy that Jon and Dany are making the beast with two backs.
Getting it on.
That he may suspect Jon's true parentage and he knows that it's all a little bit icky. Or even, and this is an interesting theory, that he's in love with Dany.
Yeah, I think that's more likely. I don't think there's any reason why he would suspect John at that point. No. This original outline of the show had a sort of a love triangle between Tyrion, Arya, and John, and with the kind of the love bit of that triangle having been replaced by Dany, you've got to assume that there's maybe potentially still traces of that there. So it could be Tyrion jealous of John and Dany. And there is also a prophecy apparently that Dany would be betrayed three times, and one of those times was for love. And so that could be Tyrion then betraying her because...
Or it could have been just because drama, and it's nice to have a portentous
shot. And it also may be just from a political point of view, it's a potential complication.
Yeah.
It could be purely innocent and purely in her best interest.
So, or he might just basically be dogging. It's a possibility.
So there's all the possibilities for you.
No, he's standing outside the door not reacting. If he was dogging, he'd be... Anyway, I've never dogged. All right. I just, my understanding is that, you know, things happen. At @will_fool asks, given all the slow build, the subtle characterization, the labyrinthine plotting by characters and writers, and the general nothing good lasts tone, is there any satisfying way of concluding the show?
That's a good question, because George R. R. Martin is on record somewhere as saying, you know, if you think this is all going to end happily, you haven't been paying attention. He said something about seeing the end of the snow as like, you know, wind blowing through a graveyard, right? It was something like that. Having said that, that would be a super unsatisfying ending to 8 seasons of a TV show like this. And so I don't think, and I could be wrong, that we're looking at a completely nihilistic, everybody dies, isn't it sucky, kind of an ending. I think there has to be some sense of triumph, some sense of victory, however Pyrrhic, at the end. Somebody has to survive. I don't know who.
It's gonna be
I'm
the
hoping
Night King
Tormund.
On the Iron Throne. Everyone's dead. It's going to be, yeah.
I don't think...
Rick Grimes comes in.
With Tony Stark.
I don't think that makes sense from a dramatic point of view. I don't think you can be that nihilistic.
Do you think that...
But I may be wrong.
It's possible George's book will end on a bit of a downer, but they will modify it for the series to make it maybe slightly less bleak.
Possibly, yeah.
Although his last book is going to be called A Dream of Spring, which has a kind of an optimistic feel to it. So... Who knows?
Although also maybe suggest you're deluded thinking that spring will come.
It's just a dream.
if the Night King represents sort of the unstoppable forces of, you know, for example, climate change, which people have been talking about as a sort of metaphor, you know, everybody's squabbling about, you know, Republican or Democrat or whatever, and it's like, it doesn't matter because we're all going to be underwater. There's a parallel there, and it may end up with the Night King winning, which would be bad.
That would suck.
Al Gore would not approve.
He would not.
Furious with that.
Shall we talk about some of the best scenes? Hopefully Variety did a little feature on the 12 best Game of Thrones Season 7 moments. The first one we've talked about, which is, of course, Arya killing the Freys. The second one they mentioned, Daenerys returns to Dragonstone, which I thought was a lovely, lovely scene. Which is obviously the end of the first episode from this season, where she arrives at Dragonstone, which is the sort of ancestral seat of her house. Place of her birth. She walks up that fantastic kind of causeway, the path that leads up, that huge entrance hall. This is in Spain, I believe.
Spain, yeah.
And they've got those wonderful sort of rock formations, which are apparently unique to that area. And you see that huge, the throne room which they built, and I watched a little documentary where they think that's the set they're most proud of. And it's the idea is that it is a room entirely designed to make people feel uncomfortable, with a huge cavernous sort of ceiling, presumably to accommodate the odd dragon, and that throne kind of hewn out of the rock face. And she goes in there and she walks into the map room and she's like, what's her last line? It's like, shall we begin? You know, lovely. Like that a lot.
Yeah, it's really cool.
What's next?
Next, Daenerys and Jon Snow finally meet.
Yeah, that was good because I think it was a little bit of a slow burn between them. There was a little bit of mutual suspicion at first, and her endless bend the knee, everybody bend the knee, like it's a new hot new dance craze.
But
you know?
Yeah, it was said so much that you start to think that's a really odd turn of phrase to use, bend the knee. It's a really odd thing to say, isn't it? It's like, it feels a bit like Morris dancing. It's like, so are you asking me to perform? I mean, do you want Michael Flatley in here, or am I just calling you queen? It's unclear.
I thought they were going to do something clever with that, actually. I thought, you know, since he said he was bending the knee, but he was actually lying down at the time and didn't really count, I thought they had some sort of wiggle room there if he then discovered he was the rightful heir to the throne. But they totally did away with that the next season, or the next episode, so, yeah. Buff.
That was a good scene. And the next one, we've kind of discussed Arya versus Brienne, which is best enjoyed in its original form when they have replaced the swords with lightsabers and put it on YouTube, which is very fun.
I haven't seen that.
Next, Elena gets the last word.
Oh, she was, I mean, she was just so great. She's the grandmother we all want to grow up to be, really,
amazing.
Isn't she? She was absolutely stunning. I was a bit frustrated by that whole sort of episode and by that whole story of, you know, one minute you've got Danny working with Yara, Ilaria, and Elena, and everything seems like, oh, this is cool. These women are teaming up. They're going to get something done. Oh, no, they're not. They're all dead apart from one. And it, you know, or imprisoned or whatever. It was just a little bit of a downer, but that her finale almost made up for it.
What's funny is that they've really, really compressed it to the extent where this was a shorter season. This was 7 episodes. The last season is going to be 6 episodes. But just in those 2 episodes, I think you had a season worth of material.
Mm.
Just the military maneuverings, getting to Highgarden, attacking Castle Rock. I mean, you look at what happened in Meereen. That could have been a season. So they've said they're going to round this up so quickly, but you could have drawn this out for another 5 years if you really wanted to.
But so why have they accelerated it? Are they accelerating it because they know that if you progressed at the pace that you progressed for the first 6 seasons, that you could be doing this for another 4 or 5 seasons?
And that's then
you
run cha-ching, into, isn't it?
Yeah, but you run into actors' contract situations,
yeah,
perhaps,
and,
at
you
that
know,
point.
Aging,
aging obviously is a big thing as well, especially. I mean, the contrast between where Isaac Hempstead Wright and Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner were at the beginning of the show and where they are now, they're not going to suddenly dramatically age any more than that, but that's certainly got to be a consideration.
Yeah.
And I think also if you'd left it many more years, you're looking at, like, shouldn't some of them be having kids or something? Shouldn't they be getting married? And it sort of begins to introduce lots of complications that you don't necessarily want, that are a distraction from what Martin has planned and potentially completely derail what Martin has planned. So I think you risk, when you're trying to fill that up and give those people something else to do and make their stories compelling, you risk just moving too far away from what they're supposed to be.
I think you also do risk, frankly, losing your audience, because rarely do great shows, certainly sort of serialised shows like this, go beyond sort of 7-8 seasons.
Yeah.
Because they do lose momentum and people just get a bit fed up. Every Star Trek, for example, that didn't get cancelled, 7 seasons. It's a magic number. Buffy, 7 seasons.
Yeah. West Wing.
Exactly. It's
but Supernatural coming in on 13, people.
Still going.
Blue Bloods, no, about to start season 8. NCIS about to start season 47.
I hear the next season of Blue Bloods, they're all feature length. It's going to be pretty epic.
And they're all going to focus on the granddad character.
It's going to be fantastic.
Who's so hateful, I can't even learn his name. I can't even watch him. Just hissing at the screen every time he appears. Anyway,
next. The loot train battle.
That was a little bit frustrating to me, again, because it was burning the wrong stuff. If Danny had succeeded in burning a bunch of gold, then you would have been like, hey, well done, this is cool. She has succeeded in a strategic goal. No, she burned a bunch of wagons full of food with winter coming, which will last for years. That's a terrible move. It's a terrible move.
Strategically, it was pretty smart, because at that point she was talking of laying siege to King's Landing, and obviously they were stockpiling food to fight off the siege. So.
But they were stockpiling food for people, and her whole thing is, I'm not going to, you know, like, victimise the people.
She wouldn't burn people. She didn't say she wouldn't starve them.
Well, I mean, it kind of feels like not breaking the wheel, Danny. It feels like a bit of a mistake. Not a mistake, but like a bad piece of, I don't know, politics, I guess.
You missed the point. There was a dragon breathing fire on things, and that was awesome.
I very much enjoyed that bit.
And also Jerome Flynn was being amazing.
Yes, he was. That
as
is
he
true.
Is.
Bronn was and remains great.
I couldn't get over him. Again, coming to this as a newbie, it's Jerome from Robson and Jerome.
Not anymore. It's not. It's Bronn.
Yes.
Nobody
Bronn.
Remembers Robson
Bronn
and Jerome.
No. Well, see, it's Jerome from Robson and Jerome.
I don't
saying
know what you
Cox
mean.
Is it Flynn? Is it Jerome Flynn? Or did I make
Jerome
up?
Jerome Flynn.
I did.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Robson Green. But is Robson Green in anything? Is he like going to end
dragon.
Up? He's going to end up in Wheel of Time.
No, I just thought that was, I was a bit frustrated by that, but I loved, obviously, anything involving dragons. Mm. And except then again, when Jamie plunges into the water, I genuinely thought you'd have Danny, you know, get the dragon to just reach a claw down and pick him up, and then they were going to have a bit of a summit. And I thought that would be a really interesting way to get the two sides talking. as with Jamie as her prisoner. Mm. But maybe he's been people's prisoner enough in this series and they decided not to do it again.
The first scene of the next episode where he's just going and comes out of the water, it's like, really? Yeah, that's the best you could
do? It's very much, and with one bound, he was free, yeah. Wasn't it? It was a classic get out of jail for no reason card.
The next scene on the list is the Sam leaves the Citadel. And the picture they've got is the Sam-splaining bit where he ignores Gilly. I would replace that with the poo montage.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. Took 4 days for them to film that. Because apparently montages, who'd have thought, take an incredible amount of time because of all the footage you need to get. They did 4 days of poo footage to get the poo montage.
So, things you learn.
Well, We've all been there.
We've all been there.
What else? What else? Anything from this episode or the last episode?
West, brackets, Aros, Coast Avengers Assemble. Hey, hey. I don't know what they did there. This is Beyond the Wall, essentially. It's right. Them all ranging forth beyond the wall to find...
The Magnificent Seven sort of memes.
I mean,
memes.
Look, that episode was fantastic. But from a strategic point of view, what the fuck were they thinking?
Yeah.
Tell you what, let's put our main people in mortal danger to get a zombie to make Lena Headey believe us. Or, here's a thought, let's park 3 dragons on her lawn and breathe fire at her until she believes us.
Also, her bodyguard is a zombie. How doesn't she believe us?
Yeah.
It's mad.
This was, I had issues with this whole plan, but you know.
It's a terrible, terrible plan. Also, I was a little bit confused, and maybe you guys can go back and watch the episode and tell me exactly what's going on. I was a little unclear how many red shirts they'd brought with them.
Oh, yes. They seem to have a few random disposable wildlings.
Yeah, because I was kind of counting, and there seemed to be 2 walking with them at one point. Yeah. Now, let's be charitable. Maybe the others were out scouting ahead. But at least 3 died. Mm. So
it's very unclear. The last one who dies when they're making their last stand.
Really,
like,
unclear.
Who was that?
Yeah, I was really worried it was, you know, somebody I cared about, and like Tormund for a minute.
Turned out it was just Yeoman Johnson from the Enterprise.
Exactly. Mm.
Next scene is Viserion dies and is resurrected.
Yeah, I wasn't happy about that.
So dragged on a bit, dragging a bit. Yeah.
As someone else I saw on Twitter, I said, why did the Night King happen to have
giant
600
things.
Yards of giant sturdy chain?
But this is the part of the Bran is the Night King theory,
isn't
it? Yeah,
that he had seen it all. All of this has happened before.
That he knows exactly where to be, exactly where to go, exactly what he needs. It makes a little bit of sense, doesn't it?
All of this has happened before, all of this will happen again. Almost like it's a wheel of time.
Almost a wheel of time, yeah.
And you know who's surviving most? I mean, it's about royal families. It's about blue bloods, in a way, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you say, Helen?
We've blown this thing wide open.
next scene.
Quickly, boy, we have loads of questions.
Okay. Next scene, John bends the knee, which was the... I thought that was a touching scene, the way she's by his bedside, looking at his manly pecs. While he's unconscious, which is a bit creepy,
and she wasn't creepy
Auntie
Danny. That's right.
Yeah. No, she's just gone in there to have a moment of quiet because you know she lost a dragon. Yeah. She's a bit upset, and you know he's unconscious, so he can't bother her.
Yeah,
I imagine
unconscious with her sexy nephew. It's fine. The death of Littlefinger. Now this
so
is
satisfying.
In many ways my favourite scene of this season. It's just fantastic because I genuinely didn't see this coming at all.
Okay, that's interesting.
He comes in and she says...
Nor did he, in fairness.
No, he didn't. You see, it's when she says, you know, you stand accused of treason and murder, and it's like, how do you answer? And it's like, turns around and goes, Lord Baelish.
Drama!
Yoink. And just the expression on his face, because he has absolute composure. He's the smuggest bastard on television all the way through with his, you know, with his little buttoned up mockingbird pin. And just the expression on his face, because he has that proper double take, what the fuck just happened thing.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. And then he, you know, he tries to speak to the Knights of the Vale. He tries to beg. He pleads. He says he loves her. He starts to cry. And it becomes clear that he's the master manipulator. And there is nothing he can do.
Yeah.
And Arya just strolls up, cool as she likes, slits his throat.
It's so satisfying because I was so sick of the really, again, bad scenes between Arya and Sansa in the previous episode. Mm. You know, yes, their relationship has always been contentious. Yes, that wouldn't suddenly change because they spent time apart. Yes, it makes sense to have a little bit of sort of mutual suspicion and distance there that they have to overcome, but they have to overcome it. And it was so good to see them actually working together and see, you know, the Starks being like a family for a moment. It was brilliant.
We actually have a question about that scene from Taryn Strong, who asks, although the shock was fun, do you wish we had scenes of the Stark siblings discussing the downfall of Littlefinger beforehand?
Well, as we heard from Isaac, there was such a scene cut out. And I think it maybe probably should have been retained. Even just a moment of Sansa knocking on Bran's door and saying something like, I have a couple of questions.
I'm actually glad they cut it, if I'm honest with you. I think on the one hand, I like the sort of switcheroo, the sort of bait and switch moment, and you're like, because otherwise we would have telegraphed it. But also, I like that it indicates, implies, or possibly leads you to possibly think that Sansa's been leading him by the nose all along. And I really like that. I like that she might have been like, yeah, I knew what you were about the whole time. Me and Arya were just fucking about. But actually, she had no idea, and she only found out when she consulted Branipedia, and he told her.
Yeah, or she had an idea, but not a knowledge. Yeah, that makes
because
sense.
I mean, he could have been more helpful all along. And I like that he's just there to do the kind of mic drop when he's like, "I didn't know," and he's like, "You held a knife to our dad's throat and said you never should have trusted me," and he's just like,
"You were wearing a blue shirt. It was 17 degrees." Yeah. The wind was coming in from the northeast.
Here's a hot tip for you. Aidan Gillen kept not just the Mockingbird pin from his cloak, but the Mockingbird pin from his jerkin as well, which is smaller. So he has one, and his son has one as well.
No, that's cute.
Are you sad to see that character go?
I think he'd served his purpose.
I think, he'd actually survived a lot longer than pretty much all similar characters except for Varys. And so I think it made sense. And you have to do some house clearing this episode. And as we winnow down the number of likable people left to basically Brienne, Davos and Tormund, you have to kind of leave somebody alive to care about. Otherwise, you kind of lose the audience.
Could we just have a moment of respect for Liam Cunningham as Davos,
just
the Onion Knight, who is so far and away the best thing some of the time, when she does her whole I'm Daenerys, mother of dragons, queen of this, queen of that, Andal's free men, and just goes, it's Jon Snow. And then he works and goes, it's King of the North.
Also, he knows the difference between less and fewer now, which is super good.
I love that Stannis was a grammar Nazi. I love that about him. Okay, and the final scene that we have in this list, The Wall Falls.
Okay.
Yeah, which you've seen, Chris. What did you think of it?
I thought it was a pretty big wall.
It was. It did fall.
And it fell. Mm. And then there were lots of like zombie things walk through the big hole. Mm. It was impressive. I'm intrigued by this. And you guys can tell me about this. And people at home listening to this are going to be yelling idiot at me. You know nothing, Chris Hewitt. But does the show seems to spend a lot of time in one locale before switching to another locale. And I can't quite remember, but I think that's the first time we were on the wall that episode, right? It's the first time so, and it's the same thing with Hardhome. Hardhome basically spends a lot of time bringing my knowledge of two episodes to bear, but it spends a lot of time in one locale, and it doesn't do that cross-cutting thing that a lot of shows traditionally do. And I kind of thought that maybe you could have had the sequence with Tormund on the wall looking out earlier in the episode just to remind people that there's a wall. I'm just intrigued by
the whole
decision
previous
behind
episode.
That.
Yeah,
of course,
the
wall, but
almost all. Yeah,
of course, but it's still interesting.
They could have started the episode with that.
You're so long in this episode before you go to Winterfell and you go to Sansa and Arya and Littlefinger and all that, and you've got. And I understand why, but it's just as intriguing from a stylistic point of view. Mm. But the actual spectacle, I thought, was pretty damn good.
Also, the musical cues. So, Ramin Djawadi, who does the score, the soundtrack, honestly, the music.
Fantastic.
Absolutely incredible. I was listening to the previous seasons, particularly the Light of the Seven, which is the piano piece, which builds up and plays continuously for about 12 minutes up until when Cersei blows up the Sept of Baelor. And then the final one, The Winds of Winter, which is when Dany sets sail for Westeros. But that piece of music, and it uses Daenerys' theme in it, where you see the dragon bringing down the wall. That's a really powerful piece. I really like that.
And he does keep layering up themes that way. I think there's a little bit of The Winds of Castamere in The Light of the Seven, actually.
Reigns of Castamere.
Reigns of Castamere in The Light of the Seven, because it's Cersei who's responsible and it's the sort of the Lannister anthem, and it's really clever.
It's that, no, he's that man has got some game.
Yeah, he really does.
Okay, we're into the last 4 hours of this podcast. And, at Brewy Christelle B asks, #SoWrong, #AndYet, #ShameShameShame.
Oh, God.
Lannister incest versus Targaryen incest. Discuss.
Who's the more incesty?
The Targaryens are definitely the more incesty. They have a long tradition of incest. No, these
Danny
ones don't
John.
Know.
Okay.
There is a long tradition of Targaryen incest.
Right, okay. They only wed. their own relatives to keep the bloodlines pure.
To keep the bloodlines pure, because they are, of course, the unburnt. They can survive dragonfire. That was the whole sort of point of them.
Plus, they don't want to lose their lovely hair.
Well, quite. Which they have, you know, the first time there's a cross. My goodness. Or not the first, but you know what I mean. So it is traditional for them to intermarry and, you know, shag their relations.
Because Aegon the Conqueror was shagging both of his sisters?
I think that is the theory. Whereas, you know, Jaime and Cersei are more trailblazers, I suppose.
But they are also twins.
I'm sorry.
Twins means it's extra incesty.
It's super incesty. Like, it couldn't be
incestier.
They're
not just brother and sister, they were one egg.
It's like looking in a mirror, only not.
It's basically masturbation, isn't it? I mean, if you're honest.
No, this is all wrong. Well, they're fraternal twins, not identical twins.
Well, no, you're right. You're right. That is true. That is true. My biology's off.
So what we made a discuss here.
I don't really know. I think
the Empire podcast does not condone incest.
That is correct. Everybody was very torn, and I think the show dealt very well with that, because what they actually did, of course, is to show you these two beautiful people who have been at the heart of the show for seven seasons, finally getting it on. As we hear that they're related.
Wow.
So very much sort of taking away any impulse to, hooray,
I believe the technical drama term is, it's a narrative boner killer.
And thank you for that, yes, James.
It really is. In the context of the show, it's a massive tentpole moment.
And it
is. What? I'm just saying, in terms of the parlance that we use in the entertainment industry, it was,
Ellen, would you like to comment at all on that particular scene and the sculpted, iron-wrought buttocks of Kit Harington?
I will just say that there has been a lot of speculation that I've seen online over the last couple of days that maybe Kit Harington should be in the running to play Nightwing, who is, of course, the comic book character famous for having an exceptionally shapely posterior.
He's the arse hero.
He is apparently genuinely the sort of the heartthrob of the DC universe, the one that everybody else talks about being super handsome.
He's
actually just been cast for something else, but he was Robin. He became Nightwing, and everybody was like, "Huh, he's so dreamy."
And he's quite clenched.
He doesn't skip squat day, is what I'm saying.
Does he suck in the old tummy? So who are we talking?
I don't
about
think
here?
He has one.
Robin,
I think that's the point.
Or Jon Snow.
I mean,
they're interchangeable.
Both is the point. So what we're saying is neither one has skimped on squats.
I see.
Or lunges.
Right. Excellent. Incest is bad. I think that's where we should.
Let's leave it there. Jon Snow's buttocks good.
Yes. No matter how hot your sister is, brother,
or aunt,
or just anyone related. Actually, no incest marriage. No,
here's
it's bad. It's bad.
Let's move on from
here's a question.
Incest.
Here's a question. So, from a legal standpoint, aunt nephew, is that actually? I mean, where does the law stand on that, Helen, as our lawyer?
I'm pretty sure it is nowadays.
Is okay.
Of course, it used to be very normal in royal families, of course. There are Philip II of Spain, I think, married his niece, I'm pretty sure, with one of his marriages.
Philip the Eight-Fingered, I believe they called him.
No, he was all right, but you go a couple of generations further and things start to get really sickly and haemophiliac and anemic and all sorts of different problems crop up. So incest is generally not a good thing for the longevity of your house. Obviously the Targaryens are magic, and that's why they get away with it.
Yeah, so incest good, but only if you're magic.
No, James.
I think we're going
incest
with an incest bad.
Right. No, unless you're magic.
Let's just say it's bad, and then the magical people can work it out for themselves. We'll stick with bad.
It's unfortunate that incest rhymes with wincest, because we should remember that it also rhymes with sincest, right? It's
wincest is a
wincest is
a whole other thing.
Oh my god!
This is supernatural / fiction.
Oh,
wincest is a thing. And
God.
Helen knows all about it.
I do not.
Most of it.
I do. That is actual slander. How even dare you?
Pulsating pectoral muscles.
Oh, good Lord, no.
I'm currently writing some Blue Blood / fiction, which
takes place around the dinner table.
It really does. It's all about Frank's moustache.
Right, Pete Woolman, Remy's Gambit, at Remy's Gambit, asks, I suspect none of the Lannisters will make it out of the series alive. What would be the most satisfying way that Cersei, Jaime, and Tyrion could go out?
I don't think Tyrion will die.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think Tyrion's got a very good chance of living.
He is George Martin's favourite character.
Mm.
So. That doesn't mean anything, though.
But I don't think he will kill Tyrion. I think if he does kill Tyrion, he'll have an incredibly noble end that will be very important.
Yes, and on the soundtrack, it'll be Tyrion's noble end, and that's how we'll know. I'm not even 100% sure that Jaime dies anymore, so
no.
I'm not going to say die on the Lannisters.
I think this was shown most prominently in the Beyond the Wall episode, that they've bottled it a little bit, that they've lost their edge, because frankly no one gives a shit about Thoros of Myr. You know, he might be Dennis Pennis, but other than that, nobody cares.
No, that's true.
And I thought someone, Tormund the Hound, someone you care about,
not Ser Jorah.
Well, no, you don't want any of them to die, but I think one of them should.
I think that's the interesting thing, isn't it? They absolutely telegraphed Tormund's death in that. They were like, he's going to die. Oh my goodness, he's going to die. And I was, you know, shouting and throwing things
and then
at the
dog
TV.
Pulled him out of water.
And then he was fine, so everything was okay. He's one of those people that you can use for a cheap emotional hit to the audience's solar plexus at this point. I think him, Jorah, Samwell are really sort of imperiled next year just because we care so much about them. Missandei as well, Grey Worm. These people have got to be worried. They are in the firing line, I feel like, because
Keith the Magic Frog, is he in danger?
Again,
it's
like
Maggie the Frog.
She's already gone. It's fine. But those people I'm worried about because they know that we love them, and yet they can probably finish the story without them.
Mm.
And it's very worth. Sir Davos.
No one kills Sir Davos on my watch.
Like, I'm just saying, like, there could be riots.
No.
Do you remember those T-shirts that everybody was wearing at Comic-Con one year?
If they kill Daryl,
we riot. Well, I'm getting them printed up with a few different names on.
It's kind of interesting now, because now I feel that they could kill Daryl on The Walking Dead and no one would riot. Is there anyone who's untouchable, like a la Daryl in the first five? You know, do you think that Jon Snow died once already, but...
I think he and Daenerys
He and Dany, yeah. Because, you know, without her, the dragons are probably uncontrollable, unless he can take over.
Okay.
I think her arc and how far she's come means she can't die. I think he's more disposable than she is. But I think we've spent so much time watching her tit about in Meereen and talk to harpies and do this and do that, that to kill her, it would just be like, oh, come on.
And it would be a bit the same for John, but I agree, you're right. I also think certain people haven't done what they came to do yet in the sense of plot-wise rather than, you know, in terms of their hopes and dreams. But, like, one of the reasons I think Tormund and Beric survived, apart from wishful thinking, is Beric hasn't done anything useful yet.
And
really.
Probably won't.
But he should at least have the chance to, and I feel like he hasn't had that yet. So.
Do you have to, though?
No, but I think why keep them around if they haven't done
also,
something yet? Why bring them back if they are not for something?
Why bring him back to life like six times to have him do nothing? Unless his purpose was just to keep them alive when they were surrounded with his flaming sword. Maybe that was his purpose.
Maybe, but that seems weak. I think there's more from him, so I think he's still there. Anyway, so, but yeah, it's worrying next season. It's worrying.
Question from at the coolest Pete, who asks, one season left, who do you think ends up on the throne?
I liked Isaac's theory that it's a red herring and it doesn't matter.
Red herrings on the throne? This is madness.
I also think the throne, the physical throne, should probably be melted down and used for Valyrian steel. And
I don't think it's made of Valyrian steel.
I know, but again, dragons. So I think it's going to be fine. But I think you get rid of the throne. I don't think the throne has
Sir Pounce. I think it's going to be King Sir Pounce.
Monty H. Withnell asks, with so many plot strands from the book made redundant because of the TV series, does this make them more, as in you guys, more and more or less eager to finish reading the books? I don't think I can follow the characters' stories now I know they will be dead.
It is hard. I do find these much less rereadable than most books.
Really?
I went back and reread, you know, the series when the last one came out many, many, many years ago. And it was quite hard kind of re-engaging in book one because you're like, well, you're dead, and you're dead, and you're definitely dead, and you're super dead. And it was just, you know, it felt very kind of empty in that sense. So they do lose a bit of readability, rereadability, because, you know, so many of the narrator characters die.
Well, as you know, I don't really reread books, but no. I read, obviously, all of these books, and I then re-listen to them as audiobooks. They're narrated by Roy Dotrice, who genuinely does a different voice for all 900-odd named characters. It's quite astonishing. Wow. And I really enjoyed it because you join the dots up. Like, but this is going to... Ah, now I know why this is there. So there's a lot of that you pick up on the foreshadowing more. I'm really looking forward to the other books, but I've enjoyed these seasons significantly more since I didn't know what was going to happen. I'd like to the point where I've now stopped watching the show on my iPad on general principle and will only watch it on my television because I need to experience it properly because I don't have a clue what's coming next.
Yeah, it is really exciting now. But it's also really exciting. It'll be exciting to see what the book does and how it addresses some of the same sort of events from a different point of view. Mm.
Renee Mehta asks, what could the Night King do to the mountain given that he controls the dead?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. But then, does he control all the dead, or does he just control the ones that he has, or his guys, have brought back to life?
Well, Helen is an expert in this. I think it might be the latter.
But, I think that there is a question there. I don't know that he necessarily controls every dead thing. I think there might be... There's a suggestion that he has to sort of lay hands on, or one of his guys, again, has to lay hands on. So... I don't know, but I'm very, very doubtful of the mountain anyway being a good thing. So, you know.
There's going to be Clegane Bowl.
Clegane Bowl is going to happen, yeah. There was that little trailer, that lovely moment between the two of them in the last episode there where you're like, and somebody pointed out it's a bit unrealistic because the Hound thing has always been keeping this rivalry between them unspoken. And he suddenly just marches up to him in the middle of a whole crowd of people and says, yeah, okay, so I'm going to kill you. Right now, but it's totally going to happen.
So pretend I haven't seen any
sure.
episodes, okay?
Far-fetched,
but
fine.
How long has it been since they saw each other?
At this point, four or five
seasons, I mean, it would have been
probably?
Since the mountain...
Was recast.
That's absolutely right. Well, the mountain was dispatched from King's Landing to kill Beric Dondarrion. And I can't remember when the Hound... Doesn't the Hound leave King's Landing... After the Battle of the Blackwater, am I right in saying?
Sounds about right.
Probably around then.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a long time, but they're not chums.
But they are brothers and have been rivals since childhood, and it was the mountain that burned the Hound.
But that might explain why. So he's does he know the mountain's going to be there, the Hound?
I think he figured.
He figures. But so he knows the mountain is
well, you say that.
Quote unquote alive.
But the mountain to everyone believes the mountain is dead. That's Sir Robert Strong.
Yes, I know.
So he clearly recognises him as who he is.
They've kind of downplayed that a little bit, though, haven't they?
Yeah, I think they're all pretty much, yeah, it's the mountain.
Yeah, I mean, because how many people are that size?
But, I mean, the man had his head cut off, so it's a bit like, yeah, this is the mountain, but his head with the what? speaking of the mountain, an interesting point on costumes. I noticed that Cersei has redone the livery of her guards. So the mountain is no longer in the kind of white cloaks of the King's Guard.
I noticed that.
And she seems to have... It's not just him, but a lot of the soldiers. And I'm assuming this is Cersei's sort of royal guard, like her Queen's Guard, if you will. They've all got this sort of black and silver.
And the crazy cool helmets.
Yeah, and they've all got sort of ninja-esque face masks.
Yeah, they're very cool.
And I thought it was just the Hound, but it is actually...
No, it's all of them, as we saw this episode, I think,
ninjas.
For the first time. They look amazing. I have to say, the costumes this season have been out of this world. I mean, Dany's snow coat for the expedition north of the wall was amazing. Everything Cersei's worn has been just brilliant.
Costume designer was saying something about when Cersei's feeling less sure of herself, she wears more jewellery. So the more jewellery she has on, that indicates insecurity and that she feels her position is weak. Whereas when she's looking more austere, it means she's hardcore.
Yeah.
Which I really like. So when you see her when she first assumes the Iron Throne, she just has that one simple chain and those really cool steel shoulder pads. And you're just like, yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so rattle through some last questions. James Monckton asks, or states rather, given previous seasons and the nature of Game of Thrones, I was actually disappointed we didn't lose more major characters. There were lots of fake outs, Jaime drowning, being saved, Tormund getting mauled by the dead and saved. Probably the first shot of next season will be Tormund's head popping out of the snow. Much as I love seeing everyone together and on the side living, I have a feeling they're going to rush slaughtering many of our favourites in the next six episodes until we're left with just a significant few left standing.
Yes.
But will the impact be lost? Long question. Will the impact be lost because we're expecting it to be like that and there'll be no time to mourn characters as it's all over?
I mean, there's a danger of a sort of that kind of, you know, Buffy finale kind of brushing aside of major deaths. You know what? You know who I'm thinking about. But I think, and this is why I've, as I've been saying, I'm worried, I think they're going to kill the people we adore so steadily that it's still going to hurt. I think they're just going to be killing people we adore all of next season. That's what I think.
All right, we'll do the character by character thing in a few minutes. Gaz Jacobs asks, we've discussed where Tormund and Beric kill when the wall fell, but the second part I really like. If so, does anyone give a shit about Beric?
No.
No. Okay.
Well, I quite enjoy
him. Harsh.
He's very sort of Biggles in a weird way. He's very sort of posh and daring and such, swashbuckling in a vague way.
I think he's rubbish.
Well, you can think that. Fair enough.
I'm with you on Tormund, though I don't want him to die.
Tormund is the greatest.
Rick Purves asks, it's probably been asked by others, but why are the White Walkers such a problem if they cannot pass the wall? Surely Jon has made things worse by giving them a dragon and more soldiers for their army every time he goes north for the wall.
Yeah, I wonder about that. Like, they must have had some sort of plan other than, hey, let's wait until somebody flies a dragon up here. I mean, there must have been, I don't know, but
because they spent seven seasons just wandering the wilds, not doing anything.
I think that's a little bit like the dragons spending seven seasons not doing very, or certainly six seasons not doing very much.
Well, they were growing up. They were at school.
They were, but equally, the Night King was growing an army to a sort of the size that it now is. Because he was, at first, when we saw him, he was kind of picking off the odd unwary Night Watch patrolman and the odd unwary wildling. Mm. And now he's like, smashed through everything north of the wall. So I think there was a parallel development between the dragons and the Night King. And the problem with both is they are now the nuclear weapons of Westeros. And they're so powerful that there's no way to do them halfway.
There's also the fact, isn't it, that the dragons are what brought magic back to the world.
Yes.
Magic didn't exist until the dragons were born. So maybe the Night King couldn't really do much until the dragons were around.
Yes, I think there is that implication as well.
But yes, as we pointed out in the interview with Isaac, you could have just sailed around the edge of the wall since it didn't actually go very far into the sea.
Okay. Sean Rival is the first person to actually ask directly, is Bran the Night King? And you guys have categorically said no.
No.
Why?
I just think it's a little bit far-fetched, and I don't think there's any evidence that time travel is a thing in this universe.
I mean,
a little bit far-fetched is kind.
There is a bit of it, because he can see the past. The question is, can he impact the past? I don't think and does his warging combined with his three-eyed ravenness mean that he could warg into the past?
But the theory is that he would warg into the past a number of different times. Like, there's circles within circles within circles to make this theory.
He becomes the Mad King, he becomes the Night King.
And that is super complicated to explain in the remaining six episodes, even if they are feature length. It just seems a little bit
I just think,
pointless.
Honestly, it's a bit of a rubbish idea, and they wouldn't use it because it's rubbish.
And the idea that, oh, look, they look alike, I think is,
I mean, it's true.
They both have legs and arms.
No, I thought it was actually quite uncanny.
Really?
Yeah, like really exactly the same shape face. But to be fair,
really?
If you look at the guy who plays the Night King, the actor who does it, that's just his face, you know. It's not like they've CG'd him to look like Isaac. His face.
Okay. I mean, all right, if you see it.
Need for Cheese asks, as everyone else is worried about me about hot pies, eventual death by ice zombie, and isn't season 8 going to be too visually samey with all the snow now that winter's here?
Okay, so I don't know that he necessarily dies by ice zombie because he's a bit closer to the neck, isn't he? So presumably it's Lannisters or Golden Company or somebody coming up that he should be more worried about in the short term, at least, I imagine. Assuming that they hold Winterfell past, like, episode one of next season. In terms of the snow, I think they've done quite a good job of making all of the different locations look quite different and getting us to know the sort of the landmarks in each location. So I feel like we'll still be pretty much okay. I mean, I don't know. We'll see.
Could I just offer a point of trivia? Mm-hmm. The guy who plays Hot Pie has genuinely, this is not a joke, opened a bakery called You Know Nothing John Doe.
Super good.
What's the guy's name?
I can't remember the actor's name, but he genuinely has. Although
you know
I would have called it Hot Pies apostrophe S. So then people, like grammar Nazis, would have come and go, I think you're fine. And go, actually, I think you're fine. I'm fucking Hot Pie. This is my fucking shop. Fuck off. And that would have been funny.
Have you been taken over by the hound or something?
He was
very sweary
there.
Ben
Hawkey is the actor.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
That's him. That is the Hot Pie.
All right. Okay. Abigail Rose, Abby Rosenquist asks, why do you think no one's been able to slice the throat of Lord Baelish until now?
Tricksy.
Yeah, very, very, very tricksy.
It's
yes.
Very tricksy. Do you think the show has declined in quality? This is a question from Tom Wise. Since the show ran out of original material to adapt.
No, I don't think so. I think there's definitely been some changes in speed and focus, maybe a little bit, but I don't feel like it's not good or not as good. I think it's just good in
different.
A different way.
Yeah, it's just different.
Wilhelm's man asks, putting aside the ickiness of the audience celebrating an aunt banging her nephew, I know there was snow everywhere in that scene, isn't it odd that Bran never knew Lyanna and Rhaegar had tied the knot despite hearing on her deathbed that Jon's real name was, Aegon?
Aegon
Targaryen.
Well, we talked about this in the interview, but Bran doesn't always know where to look. He has access to all the information, but it doesn't mean he's actually absorbed it all yet. So he had to know that there was something there to look for.
Yes.
And, you know, that scene where they get together is pretty short. And I think, what is it? It's like 30 seconds, which has probably got to be a record for getting 6 inches of snow. Sorry.
That is terrible. If you'd watched Deep Blue Sea, you'd know that snow moves really fast. So.
Yeah, and ends quickly. Anyway.
Oh, my word.
Oh, dear.
Some unexpected flurries of snow. All right, okay, last question from a listener. Sean Neal, why haven't they never featured the Giant's Causeway in 7 series? Are they saving it?
Do you know what? I think the Giant's Causeway makes it far too difficult to film there. We saw this in Hellboy 2. It's been a real problem. We need more filming on the Giant's Causeway. They basically, I think they refuse to close for a morning for filming, so nobody's able to film there unless they're fine with tourists walking into shot. This is a Northern Irish landmark. It's a World Heritage site, in fact. It's an amazing, amazing place. Everybody go visit Northern Ireland. It's great.
Yeah.
And up around the north coast from where I'm from, basically everywhere you stop, including my local beach, now has a little sort of plaque telling you what scenes from Game of Thrones were shot there.
Really?
So the local beach where I'm from was the beach in Dorne where Jaime arrives with Bronn back in season, 5? And you thought that was somewhere hot and tropical, and it was not. It was Port Stewart. So the whole of the Northern Irish coast basically has featured at some point in Game of Thrones, apart from the actual Giant's Causeway itself. Which would it play? Part of the Neck, maybe? Part of the Iron Isles, perhaps?
I've often asked myself the same question. Sometimes I lie awake at night.
Of course you
wondering
do.
How they're going to fit the Giant's Causeway into the Game of Thrones.
I just don't think they are. Sorry.
I don't know. I mean, my personal theory is that Finn McCool, who created the Giant's Causeway, is a bit picky about the shows and films that his home, his causeway, ends up in. So, yeah, we need to talk to him. Go direct to Finn McCool. All right. Okay, that's it for readers' questions. Again, apologies if you didn't get yours read out. It just means that, you know, we'd already discussed it. So I'm going to go very, very quickly because we got to go.
Because this has already been a feature-length podcast.
Well, it's a feature-length podcast for 67 episodes.
All right.
Fine. It's all good. Your predictions for season 8, character by character, what happens to them? Let's start with Podrick. Is the true hero of the show.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to him?
Podrick with the magic cock. No, this is a thing.
I know.
This is, in fact, it's referenced in the... Do you know why he says it to him? He says to Tyrion, you can suck his magic cock later. Do you know why he says that to him?
No.
Tyrion, to reward him in, God, season, I want to say 2. I think it's 2. Because he sends him to a Littlefinger's brothel to lose his virginity, and he goes into a room with 3 prostitutes and comes out with his gold intact because they all had such a good time they didn't want to take his money. So he has a magic cock.
Golly.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that totally changes my prediction, which is that he probably doesn't make it till the end of the season alive.
The Ron Jeremy of Westeros.
Good Lord.
Perhaps he can rebuild the wall because he can
nope.
dig tunnels. Anyway,
apparently he calls it the Giant's Causeway.
All right, Jon Snow. Alive, dead, king?
Alive.
Undead.
I mean, maybe undead. Maybe he probably has a lot of like faffing about and arguing and then becomes like co-king at some point.
Okay.
He is the mope meister. Can you imagine the amount of like, you know, emo soul searching he's going to do when he finds out he's related to Danny?
So emo. Oh my gosh.
Ye gods.
It's like, oh man, I totally fancy her, but she's my aunt.
But also the political aspect, like, should I take up the throne or should I try and like form an alliance with her anyway? Because, you know, got to work together against Night King, so maybe we should just keep boning. I mean,
just for old time's sake, you understand.
Just politically speaking, you know, yeah, just because we've got
to
be.
To get pregnant. That's going to be the thing, isn't it? Because they already sort of foreshadowed that when he points out that Miri Mazda is perhaps not the best source of information.
What do you think that's what it was? Subtle foreshadowing.
Yeah, so they set up a new Targaryen dynasty, I guess, yeah. potentially.
Right. Okay, Daenerys.
I mean, part of that, I think we're looking at them taking the throne together, but, you know, I would welcome all surprises.
Yeah.
Tyrion.
Alive.
Alive.
And?
Awesome. Alive-o.
Alive
just,
and awesome.
Like, yeah, just being super good. I mean, we haven't really talked about Tyrion, but he's just been super good. Like,
he's awesome.
His strategy has been terrible. He's led Daenerys down the wrong path a few times, but he's also tried to check her worst instincts. I think she has to take the lion's share of responsibility for her own sort of strategic mistakes. He had that great scene with Cersei at the end, which I think was really well played, even if she was playing him. And he's just great. Yay for Tyrion.
Davos.
I worry about him. I think they
he's
might.
He's dour and northern. They always survive.
I hope so. He's survived a lot longer than any of us might have thought. So long may that continue. He's just so good.
Jerome out of Robson and Jerome.
Bronn, everybody thought was going to die this season. Like, he was very high on the predicted kill list.
Where is he, though? Because is he still with Cersei? Because he wasn't with Jaime when Jaime left. But his loyalty is to gold, isn't it? But he's kind of Jamie's mate.
I think he's our one likable figure left in King's Landing. That's what I think.
I think he's for the burn.
Yeah, he may not make it to the end.
Cersei.
Dead.
Probably, yeah.
She doesn't live. There's no way she lives.
But we thought she'd be gone this season and she's still there.
True,
so.
True.
Sansa.
I feel like she's going to make it now. I feel like she might be the sort of queen in the north while Jon goes south to take the whatever's left of the Iron Throne or whatever. I think she's like she's the Stark in charge right now.
I feel both she and Arya are at risk. I feel maybe one of them is going to die. I think Bran is definitely going to die. I just have a three-eyed raven-esque tingling about that.
I think you can be right about Bran, and I would even think you're right about Arya. I think Sansa might survive.
She's been through some shit. She deserves to survive.
Yeah.
How long has it been since the Stark bought it?
Only a season. Rickon at the end of last season.
But wasn't he? He was a minor Stark, wasn't he?
How dare you, sir?
Jaime.
Jaime is going to make it a little bit further. I think he might make it to the end.
Live or die heroically, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Has he become more of a hero as the show's
He's lived
progressed?
Long enough to become the hero, hasn't he, Alan?
He has.
Jorah.
I worry.
Dead. Yeah. Ian Glenn is definitely not long for this world.
Yeah, my understanding of this
is
that he's...
That will devastate a generation.
My understanding of this is that he's deeply in love with Danny. Is this true? But it's not reciprocated.
No.
Yeah, he is. He was the one that they called Sir Friendzone.
Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, poor man.
Hey.
No.
Sir Friendzone is definitely getting killed.
Oh, he's like Gunther, isn't he? He's basically... Oh, that's such a shame. Theon.
Dead, probably. Yeah. Although, dead. You know what? Like, not everybody's going to die. I will say this. Not everybody's going to die because you still have to have heads of houses. And we've currently got, like, three enormously powerful houses that are totally leaderless in the south. And there've got to be some people there to pick up the pieces at the end and get the continent working again. So why not Theon? I think he's getting a little bit of his goodness back. And I know, yes, there's very good reasons why he can't find a house long term. couple of them missing, but you know, I think he's been through a lot. Like Sansa, he deserves a break. Well, and he might make it.
He's going after Euron, who is like the cockiest guy in Westeros, and he, of course, is the least cocky guy in Westeros, so actually it's an interesting pairing.
Fair enough. Okay, really, really quickly, Brienne.
Die heroically, probably.
Lives.
Okay. Let's hope.
Love
you. You think Bran's going to die? You think Arya's going to survive?
I'm not sure about Arya.
At risk.
Very much at risk.
Okay. Melisandre.
Going to die, but she's going to come back and do something first.
It feels a bit like she's not in anymore because she served her narrative purpose. I mean, I wonder, I think we'll possibly see her again if the whole R'hllor thing... Because there's still a big question mark over what is all that stuff about.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I think she'll be back first.
Are they going to explore that, or are they going to brush it, you know,
I think they're going to bring something back from that.
Miss and Day?
Die.
Is that because she's going to be off filming
Fast 9? I was about to say, defends on the shooting schedule for Fast 9, I would say.
No, but I think she might, like, die defending Danny kind of a thing. I feel like... Or she and Grey Worm could be caught up in some kind of catastrophe and sort of they would be the human faces that are swept away by this overwhelming disaster.
Okay, last three. The Hound.
Live.
He might live, but he's going to have a hard time of it, finding his brother.
I read a theory, and I skim read it, so I don't... But someone says he's going to play a bigger part. He could play a bigger part in the overall story of Night King and killing the Night King. I didn't understand it.
Well, he's hardcore, so maybe.
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty cool. Okay. He's very afraid of fire, so probably won't like being around the dragons, so you've got to assume he'll be trying to go off and do something else somewhere else.
Yarp. Narp. Ned Stark.
I think we can safely say he's dead.
Heroic return?
Presumably the Night King will animate his headless corpse from the tombs of Winterfell and send it storming towards King's Landing.
Oh, that's a disturbing thought, isn't it? Getting into the tombs.
Headless
that's not...
Sean Bean.
Sharpie. He comes back just to die again. Oh, to see what you can do. Right, and the very last one. Christopher Hivjus, Tormund Giantsbane.
He's going to live, man. He's going to live, I hope.
The lover of bears.
But yes, you know, it was cold.
All right. So, by my reckoning, I wasn't making a list as you said that, but I don't think you predicted anyone to die.
I did. We said people are at risk. We did predict Ser Jorah's death. We're worried about Ser Davos.
They're all red shirts, aren't they, ultimately? They're all expendable cannon fodder. I want something unpredictable. I want to, you know, if I'm going to start watching a show, because I've got until 2019 to catch up with all 67 episodes, persuade my wife that it's going to be right up our alley. There's no dinner table scenes with a really annoying old granddad, but...
Well, there's a few.
Yeah. Are there?
Oh, yeah.
They were right in. We're banging. This is going to be great. I've got time to catch up in this. But season 8, I want something unpredictable. I want someone big who's like, apparently safe to be taken off the board.
A lot of these people that we are saying are safe only...
Our wishful thinking.
There's an element of wishful thinking.
In art, as in life, James.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. On that note, thank you for listening to our blitherings. I understood half of that, and so I hope you understood more of that. That is it for our Game of Thrones Season 7 spoiler podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Our next spoiler podcast will probably be for Kingsman: The Golden Circle. That'll be out sometime in late September. Don't forget, we're doing a live podcast as well at the London Podcast Festival, September 16th, the evening of September 16th. That's a Saturday. So you can get tickets for that at www.kingsplace.co.uk. You can buy multiple tickets as well for other events. It'll be at the London Podcast Festival. So come along and see us talking live. There may be discussion of incest. Who knows? And if you don't listen to the regular podcast, the regular Empire podcast comes out every Friday. We would love it if you could subscribe and leave lovely reviews for us on iTunes. That would be much appreciated. So until next we meet, it's goodbye. From Helen O'Hara.
Valar Morghulis?
No, it's Juliana Margulies.
Such an easy mistake.
Well, obviously. It's goodbye from James Dyer.
Valar Doheris.
Hey.
Hers means all men must die, and mine means all men must serve. Well, it was either that or night gathers and now my watch begins. But I thought not.
The night is dark and full of terrors, you know.
All right, okay. And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to bend the knee, which at my age is becoming increasingly more difficult. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.